Okay, I will call the April 27th, 2015 regular meeting to order, 2015-12. If you'll all stand. And if the students will lead us in the flag, I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
All right, thank you very much. Madam Clerk, will you please note the roll?
Okay. Everyone is present.
Thank you. And again, just officially, our two honorary mayors from Juno Douglas High School are Sophie and Martina. They're with us sitting at the table at my left here. Welcome, you guys. And we will move forward with Public Service Recognition Week. And we have a proclamation from the mayor's office here that I'll read. And this is to recognize all the public service people within our community who work with us. Today is a good example. We have a bunch of firemen here who do great public service for us, and we're going to honor two of them especially right after this proclamation. But this is much more in-depth and honors all of the government workers who help us every single day of the year and move our community forward in a very professional manner. And this is in recognition of their service to all of us. So this is a proclamation from the Mayor's Office, Public Service Recognition Week. Whereas each year since 1985, the first week in May is set aside as Public Service Recognition Week in appreciation of the thousands of dedicated men and women who serve the public. And whereas this week is set aside to acknowledge those government employees who best exemplify the spirit and sacrifice public service requires, and whereas government employees are committed to excellence in public service, making countless contributions to our nation every day at local, state, and federal levels to help keep us safe in our communities and improve the quality of our lives. And whereas men and women in public service defend our nation, enforce the laws, maintain transportation and sanitation systems, deliver our mail, help protect the environment, respond to emergencies of all natures, explore outer space, educate our children, provide health care, and a multitude of other vital services. And whereas communities large and small depend on those who serve as elected officials and administrative personnel to accomplish the work of the people, and whereas government is only as good as the men and women who work for that government. And now, therefore, I, Merrill Sanford, Mayor of the City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, on behalf of the City and Borough Assembly, do hereby claim the week of May 3rd through May 9th, 2015, as Public Service Recognition Week, in witness whereof I have hereto set my hand and caused the seal of the City and Borough of Juneau, Alaska, to be affixed to this 27th day of April 2015. Merrill Sanford, Mayor. So good job to all our public service. So before I get off of this subject here, there's some big things happening in Baltimore right now with our police and firemen back there and the community as a whole. No matter which way you believe who's right and wrong, it is hurting their community right now what is going on there. And people in public service are getting hurt because of it. So however you pray, however you say thanks to whoever, please do that in the next week to help them come through their very serious problems that they have there in this coming week or two and month. to get over this. So thank you very much. Okay, next we have the Medal of Honor for a couple of firemen. Chief, you want to come up?
Intimidating standing in front of me, though. See, can we get the Captain Todd Cameron and Firefighter Kermit Jesse Chubby and Mono? Tonight I've got the privilege to get out one of the department's highest honors to two of our outstanding members. Give you a little background on what occurred and why they're being recognized tonight. On February 27th at approximately 1:20 p.m., Capital City Fire Rescue received a report of an unconscious person face down in the Gastineau Channel. The page went out for any available department members to respond. Two of the first rescuers on scene was Captain Todd Cameron and firefighter, new paramedic Jesse Ajabe. A waterside rescue was still 5 to 10 minutes away after this gentleman had already fallen 20 to 30 feet and had been unconscious in the water for 7 to 10 minutes. It was determined that time was of the essence. Firefighter Chave, without hesitation, he and his captain shed the radios onto the beach and swam out 20 plus yards into the Gastineau Channel to retrieve the unconscious victim. The moment the patient was set down on the beach, CPR was started. Both captain and the firefighters started working cardiac arrest in their own stages of hypothermia. Their hands were shaking so bad from the cold, they had to have other people open the packages for the equipment for it so they could perform their life-saving skills. After several good minutes of CPR, the patient did regain a pulse and was attempting to breathe on his own. This was a tremendous effort by several people that had this positive outcome. Many other department members will be receiving unit citations for their parts in this heroic rescue. The following people received those citations. Incident Commander Dan Jager, Mike Pearson, Travis Wolf, Jerry Luckup, Randy Aldifer, Paul Jennings, Brent Clancy, Scott Lockey, Cheyenne Sanchez, Dave Edmonds, and Sean Ray. For the heroic effort to diving into the 38-degree water at great personal risk and retrieving a patient and providing a successful resuscitation, CCFR would like to recognize Captain Todd Cameron and firefighter paramedic Jessica Chave with the department's first Medal of Valor. These two gentlemen are a fine representation of all of our responders.
Getting honored as heroes and as an awardees of some sort. They were just doing their job as they expect to do their job from their heart. And they ended up being in this predicament that is very neat and is very good, and the award is well deserved, not only for these two, but all the rest of the received awards and for all the rest of our fire service who put their life on the line every day for all of us. So it's a neat thing and a good thing, and I'll say congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you for your service. That's awesome.
Do any of you young kids want to shake Carol's hands? You gotta get them all, you guys. There's a couple more. we'll move on to approval of minutes. Chief, I don't know if you guys all want to go. They are more than welcome to go, or they can stay and listen to some of the meetings. Okay, we're going to approve the minutes. So we have the March 10, 2015 special assembly meeting, number 2015-06. Are there any corrections? Ms. Crane?
I had just a couple of minor ones, not substantive, and I will give them to the clerk afterwards.
Okay. Is there any objections with minor changes to these minutes? The March 10th are approved. March 16th, regular assembly meeting 2015-07. Are there any corrections to these minutes? Seeing none, is there any objections to their approval? Seeing none, 2015-07 are approved. March 25th, 2015, special assembly meeting 2015-08. Any corrections? Any objections to their approval? Hearing and seeing none, so ordered. April 1, 2015, special assembly meeting number 2015-09. Any corrections? Any objections to their approval? Seeing none, so approved. Manager's request for agenda changes. Madam Manager.
Yes, please. I would like to move under public hearing. I would like to move up item D, the school district funding, to the first public hearing, given our special guests today. So once again, it's ordinance 2015-21. If that could be the first item under public hearing, please.
Are there any objections to that? Okay, we'll move it forward when we get to the public consent agenda. Anything else, Madam Manager?
No, thank you.
Thank you. Public participation on non-agenda items. Funding, education, pool. Are we doing a pool? Yes, we are.
Yes, we are.
Funding, education. Okay, everything else is between pool and education. Okay. So public participation, unless there's anybody else who has something else they wish to speak to us on. Mr. Mark. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I just noted the video conferencing happening, and it looks like we're live streaming the assembly meeting now.
We are doing an experiment right now. Today was the first day. That's why you see so many people dressed up.
I just wanted to thank you for making that happen. It was... It was always something I was interested in when I was in the assembly, and it's great to see progress being made, and I thank you for making these assembly meetings or attempting to make them more accessible to the public, so thank you. Thanks for your service.
We still have to find all the money to do it. So.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks, Mark. Okay. Anybody else in the public wish to speak to us? Come on up, sir.
This isn't about the school or the pool, so I thought I'd...
Is it about something on the agenda?
No, it's not.
Okay, go ahead.
My name is Jim Scholl. I live at 3640 Greenwood Avenue. I serve on the Senior Citizen Supports Board. And our president, Sue Douglas, was going to speak tonight. But she became sick. And so she asked me to speak to you folks. SCSSI and the Assisted Living Task Force continue to work towards establishing an assisted living facility for junior-senior population. We've already spoke to you about the demand, and I'm kind of trying to chop this down a little bit so I can get it in 2 minutes. Not too long ago, we discussed the potential of downtown Gastineau Apartments property as a location for a new 80-unit assisted living facility. At first, we rejected the idea, thinking the property was too small a footprint, and because we have been advocating for a campus model in a much larger area. However, no doors have been shut towards achieving our goal. Plan A, the campus model, that could include some independent senior housing by a private developer and construction of a nonprofit center that would house the Aging and Disability Resource Center, is still desirable. But Plan B, a home for seniors needing daily assistance, could also accommodate a new senior center on a smaller footprint and provide the housing and care we so badly need right now. It has become clear in the last week that we should explore further into Gastineau Apartments property. We quickly sent a letter to you that I hope is in your packet tonight. We've not yet had a full opportunity to scope out how a development would work on this property, but we do believe there is an opportunity for some innovative terrace design that could meet the various requirements for such specialized housing. For example, the property extends up Gastineau Avenue, where access parking turnaround could be situated, rather than down below on busy Franklin Street. Much like that was done down further down Gastineau Avenue in the yellow apartment complex built by Housing First and managed by St. Vincent de Paul. We stated in our letter that we believe an extraordinary public purpose could be fulfilled if CBJ acquires the Gastineau apartment property, demolishes the building, and then provides it for the construction of the senior assisted living home and senior center. This could move our project along sooner, could make it more profitable, and would shorten the way too long timeline. More importantly, it would give CBJ a way to serve the public purpose of keeping our seniors healthy and safe as productive members of the community as long as possible. In our letter, we called your attention to the Juneau Economic Development Plan, Building Senior Economy, also referenced the Junior Senior Housing Market Demand Study. What I'd like to say is that there is a profound economic advantage to keeping our seniors in Juneau. Finally, the addition of this new facility downtown in the downtown core will greatly enhance and encourage other needed improvements. We think there's a win-win here, and we propose that you seriously consider this collaboration. Further study about the property is needed, but for now, to placeholder for Juneau's seniors sounds like the right thing to do. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Schultz.
If there's any questions?
Is there any questions for Mr. Schultz? Thank you very much. And
thank you.
That letter wasn't in your packet tonight, but it just came.
We got it through our email.
Yeah. Okay. And we'll bring it up at a different setting than this right now. Okay?
Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Okay, anybody else? Public comment? I will close public comment, and we will move forward to the consent agenda. Does anybody in the public request for a consent agenda item or changes other than ordinances for introduction? Seeing none, public requests for consent agenda changes are closed. Assembly requests for consent agenda changes. Yes, sir. Mr. Nanker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would like to move Ordinance 2014-24, which is Item D on the consent agenda, to the public hearing to be discussed with Ordinance 2015-25, which is an associated and related ordinance. I think it would be more appropriate to speak to 24 right after we speak to 25.
Okay, say it one more time, will you please, Mr. Nanker?
The item D under our consent agenda, which is Ordinance 2014-24 AP, I would like to move that to the public hearing to be discussed directly after 2015-25, Ordinance 2015-25 on the public hearing.
And
they're both related to the Dunn Street project.
Point of order, Mr. Mayor.
Yes, go ahead.
This is an ordinance for introduction for a public hearing. We can't move it to a public hearing. We have to give it notice. So.
Right.
I don't think we can move it forward.
Yep. Miss Law Department.
That's correct.
So we can't move it forward.
Mr. Nankervis. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Okay.
Thank you for that correction.
Okay.
I'd like to remove it and send it into then. But I don't have a proposal when to put it back on because I think it's premature I think I will leave it on, actually.
Leave it on
for now.
Okay.
And I'll address that later. Thank you.
Okay. Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move we adopt the consent agenda and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, the consent agenda has been adopted, and we will move forward to Item B?
D.
I can hear you. Okay, go ahead. Would the clerk please read the title?
Ordinance 2015-21, an ordinance appropriating funds from the Treasury for FY16 school district operations.
Thank you. Madam Manager.
This ordinance would appropriate to the school district an FY16 operating budget of $86,260,100. The school district's operating budget is general operations of $71,044,600, special revenue that includes pupil transportation, food services at $6,491,600, and other operations, student activities, grants, et cetera, for $8,723,900, for a total amount of $86,260,100. The FY16 school budget is supported with a combination of funding sources that includes local funding of $25,752,600. This consists of $25,982,600 for general operations and $770,000 for student activities funds. Student activities funds includes $565,000 for student activities and $200,000 comes from sales tax, $70,000 for pupil transportation, and $135,000 for community schools. The $25,982,600 in general operations support is an increase of $455,700 over FY15. The $770,000 for student activities fund is an increase of $392,500 over FY15. State statute requires the Assembly to determine the total amount of local education funding support to be provided and provide notification of the support to the school board within 30 days of the school district's budget submission. On April 22, 2015, the Assembly approved funding the school district under the FY15 State Education Foundation funding formula at $25,526,900. I recommend holding the charter-required public hearing for this ordinance and referring it back to the Assembly Finance Committee for further review.
Thank you. And now I will open up for public comment. This, and we have seven people signed up to say something to us. And can I have the adults who are on the list now? One, two, three. So three of you are the adults. Can I hear your name real quick?
Steve Zewing. Jones Parvis. Jones Parvis.
Jones Parvis.
There's another one. And we'll, the lady over here?
Jones Parvis.
Okay. Okay, so we'll just go down the line then. Sierra Lloyd.
Did you say 2 minutes?
Hmm?
Did you say 2 minutes?
Yeah, 2 minutes. Right there. Good evening, young lady. If you'll just give us your name and address, and then you'll have 2 minutes to testify. Thank you for coming.
Okay. Hi, my name is Sierra Lloyd. I live at 4033 Ridgeway. Can I start my testimony? Okay. I am a seventh grader at Zantakahini Middle School, and I think you know exactly why I'm here. I want you to fund the Juneau School District to the cap. But when you make your vote, don't think about me. Think about the kids who aren't here. Budget cuts won't affect me as much as the kids you don't see here. The kids whose parents have to work 5 jobs. The kids whose parents can't be here because they don't have a car. The kids who have to get donated dresses from the box at school for the 8th grade dance. The kids you don't see in soccer club, swim club, etc. I am in Glacier Swim Club. My family can afford to send me to after school activities that other kids can't afford to go to. If you cut the budget, the kids that aren't here today will lose all those similar opportunities that the school provides. Yes, large class sizes will affect me. Yes, cutting activities will affect me. But I'm in advanced classes. I understand stuff pretty easily, and my parents help me with school and can help me with school and outside of school. Many other kids don't get that. When you vote for funding to the cap, it's not just me who's going to thank you. It will be the kids who can't afford for you to vote against it. Please vote to fund to the cap. Otherwise, you will realize that the money you think you're saving will cost you much more in the long run. Thank you for listening to my testimony, and thank you very much for supporting education.
Thank you, Sierra. Good job. Any questions for Sierra? Really good. Good job. Thank you very much. Next one is Anika Schwartz. Good evening.
Hi, I'm Anika Schwartz, and I go to 8480 North Douglas Highway.
Okay.
Hi. I think education is very important to our community. I go to Gastineau School, and I've been looking forward to the programs that Don Takahini will provide when I'm in middle school. I have a really good teacher, but it's hard to keep all of her class members in control. Also, I go to a separate class for math and language arts. It's called extended learning, and it's my favorite part of the day. But right now, the Yale teacher, Becky Engstrom, is split in between two schools. We have too many kids in the program, all crammed into the small classroom she gets. In Harborview, they have the same problem. Without education, Juno Alaska will not have a future. I also think when a kid is in a smaller class, they tend to focus more. With a large class, the teacher can't meet many needs of clarification or help, and it's harder to do as many writing projects because the teacher would have to edit a whole bunch of kids, which would take a lot of time out of the day. Another concern is how small the classroom actually is. When I was in second grade, we had not enough chairs or tables, so our teacher had to put a desk on the end of the closet, which was the only desk in the room. If we don't get a good education, then who will be sitting where you are right now when you leave, and who will take care of our world? I know that we are on a tight budget that we are trying to handle, but on your list of things that you could cut, education should be the very last. I understand money is hard, but you should do what is right for us, the community. Thank you.
Thank you, Anika. Is there anybody who wishes a question? No questions. Thank you, Anika.
Well done.
Adara Allen?
Hello, I'm Adara Allen. I live on 535 Harris Street. Hello. Hello, my name's Adara Allen. I'm a 10-year-old homeschooled fifth grader. You may wonder why a homeschooler is here. I'm here because I believe that everyone deserves a good education. The world is a better place if people have the chance to learn and grow in the best possible environment. Please support funding education. Thank you.
Thank you, Adara. Are there any questions for Adara? Thank you very much.
Not at this time, Mr. Mayor.
Good job. Brower Bryant?
Hi, my name is Bronwyn Byford. I live at 3841 Melrose Street. I go to JCCS and I'm a sixth grader. Juno Community Charter School. And I want the school budget to be funded to about the max. Because of some of the classes, like art and music. It can open you up to new ideas and give you more choices in your life for careers after high school. Art and music classes can help your imagination stay strong, and kids might not want to drop out of high school. Some parents can't afford to give private lessons to kids, and other parents don't have time to do this. Things like art and music can improve your stamina in math, English, social studies, and science. The days I have art, music, or other elections are the days that
make me want to go to school. These days make me happy. So please, fund school educations to the max.
Thank you, ma'am. Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Good job. Next we have Steve Seawing. After Steve will be Eva Stern.
Good evening. It's Steve Suing, and I live at 423 East Street. Thank you for moving this up to the agenda, top of the agenda. Really appreciate that. And thank you for your commitment recently to fund education to the CAP. I don't think you hear thank you enough in your job, and definitely really appreciate that. Last year when the assembly decided not to fund the CAP, like a lot of parents, I had some concerns, and I wasn't really sure how that was going to play out. My son is a first grader at Montessori Borealis program, and in talking with his teacher, she said when she had 23 students that the class worked perfectly for her, but adding those three students this year made it so she doesn't have a common space that all kids fit into it. That concerned me. But then I started talking to other parents and heard that there was a class in the district that had 32 students. And so I felt happy that my son wasn't in that class, but definitely sorry for those 32 students. And I had a degree in English, so I'm not so good at mathematics. So I kind of floated the idea to some parents that the visual of what 32 students looks like could be very powerful. So once again, I said I'm an English major, but I counted 31 or 32 students here tonight, K through fifth grade, and I'm happy that they took the opportunity to get involved in their government, see what it's all about, and give that visual to all of you that what that looks like. I want to thank them for being well-behaved. The sugar hasn't kicked in that we gave them a little earlier. Unfortunately, it's probably going to kick in about bedtime, so be careful what you wish for. I appreciate, again, you planning to fund to the CAP. As we all know, that's a bit of a moving target right now. What I haven't seen in the discussions, I know is a possibility, is to give that money back to the CAP that wasn't in the FY15 budget. I'd like to encourage you to explore that idea. We know that our schools are going to be hurting, and anything that can happen now or into FY16 can make a big difference. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you, sir. We'll move to Eva Strum. Stress?
Sturm.
You're going to have to say your name nice and loud for me because I couldn't read it, okay?
Hi, I'm Eva Sturm, and I live on 903 B Street. I'm in fifth grade, and I go to Harborview Elementary School, and I have 32 kids in my class. Having that many kids in the class is very difficult, and I'm very supportive of education funding. And that you might think that putting a lot of kids in one class will be a shortcut to not having to have as many teachers, but you're wrong. If you put that many kids in one class, it will only be hard on the teacher, but will also be hard on the kids. There are 30 kids or more in one class, one kid isn't behaving. It's going to disrupt the whole class instead of just one person or the people who are next to them. So, thank you.
All right, thank you. Is there any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. Good job, young lady. Okay, we'll move to Ms. Joan Paradis. Welcome.
Hi, I'm Joan Paradis, and I too live at 903 B Street, and I'm here to thank you all. I thank you all for your service. I know that you have to make tough decisions every day, and I'm glad you're doing it and I'm not doing it. I'm not here to say that I would have a better time doing what you're doing or be more apt for the job, but I don't think I could say anything better than what the kids said today. My daughter's in a classroom with 32 kids, the largest K through 5 classroom, and it has definitely impacted her education. I know families that are leaving Juneau because of education. I know 5 families in the past 3 years that have left because of education, because the lack of support from the state and not necessarily the city. As I said, I really appreciate what you're doing, and whatever you could do to pick up the slack for the current situation is going to be really appreciated. And as Sierra said, our first speaker, who was really eloquent, it's not for the people who are here. It's not only for us. It's for the entire community. So once again, thank you for your service. I'm looking forward to seeing that support with funding to the CAP. And as Steve mentioned, if there's anything we could do to pick up the slack with some retroactive funding, that would be terrific too, for the size of the classrooms, for the activities that are really important, and for doing the right thing for our community. So thank you again for your service.
Thank you very much, ma'am. Are there any questions? Seeing none, thank you very much. We have one more. Mr. Martin Stephenson? Yes, sir. Welcome, sir.
Hi. My name is Martin Stepton. I live at 3333 Noel Avenue, apartment 105, right up the hill, other side of the bridge. I just learned about the Great Alaska Schools recently, and I started going to their gatherings. I went up to the gathering up on the Capitol Hill a couple weeks ago. I went up and sat in the halls for a little bit and helped support, you know, the state. Having a hard time, and you know, we're okay right now, and I think all of your hearts are in the right place with education, and from what it sounds like, we're going to get funded to the CAP, I hope. And I just wanted to show my support for education, and I think we have a real tough time coming ahead. You know, I don't think we've seen tough times in a long time here in Juneau, and I think we have tough times coming ahead now, and we need to keep our hearts and our heads in the right place for education. And remember, education is the most important thing. And, you know, I come from a small community, St. Paul Island. There's only, you know, 500 people there. And back in the 80s and the 90s, we had really good years crabbing. And the city of St. Paul was doing really well, and they were able to contribute a lot to the schools, and they funded a lot of musical, and they're able to music programs and languages and just all kinds of good stuff. And we don't have that anymore out there. But the city, when they were doing good, they helped out. And in the good times of St. Paul, the city of St. Paul stood on the right side of history for standing up for education, and I'd like to see you folks do the same thing. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Stephenson. Any questions? Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Okay, so that will close testimony on this particular ordinance. We have two other people signed up for future ordinances, and that's Mary Lou Sparks and Mr. Jim Carroll. For the pool later on. Just so you know, we're not putting anybody out here. You're going to speak. Okay, so can we have public comment is closed for this ordinance? Assembly action? Ms. Stroll.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move adoption of ordinance 2015-21 and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objection?
Yes.
Excuse me. Mr. Mayor, I would move we refer the ordinance to the Finance Committee as part of our standard budget process.
I was just, you know, I was just so inspired.
Exactly.
You know. So, yeah.
Okay.
I appreciate Mr. Keel's correction to our procedure.
Okay. Does everybody have that, where we're going with it, the Finance? Thank you very much, everybody, for working together. Is there any objections to that? So ordered and approved. That ordinance is approved. Good job, you guys, gals. Okay, we will move on to, or back to, public hearing at the beginning. Pardon me? Do the young students wish to leave right now? Okay.
Mark.
We'll take a 5-minute recess here.
Thank you for testifying.
Thank you, guys. Good job. Thank you, guys, very much.
I know it took. I'd be petrified.
Yeah.
Now if you see my baby is oh so fine. She's long and lean and never mean. She tastes like cherry wine and she's my baby.
She drives me crazy.
Now a love like mine should never be denied. I wanna hug and kiss her, Lord, I really miss her all the time. All the time. I said, why me? Why'd she have to run away from?
And the time is 7:42, and you're listening to KTOO News in Juneau, Alaska. You're currently tuned to the CBJ Assembly meeting, and they've gone on a short break. Please stay tuned. They'll be back in a few minutes. The Big Bad Voodoo Daddy Band, which will be playing here in Juneau Jazz and Classics coming up in May. So look that up. Sounds like a great group.
Why'd she have to run away from me? It's a mystery. Why I love her more today. I love
the assembly back to order here out of recess. And Sophie and Martina, do you remember when you were that young?
I don't.
I wasn't going to ask you.
Thank you.
All right. Good. It's neat. So we'll move back to the beginning of the agenda for public hearing, and we will look at Ordinance 2015-17. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance amending the Uniform Sales Tax Code relating to the single item and service tax exemption and the senior citizen tax exemption.
Thank you. Administrative report.
This ordinance would amend the CBJ Sales Tax Code in two ways. First, it would change the portion of a single item or service eligible for an exemption by increasing the threshold value, which must be met before the exemption is granted, from $7,500 to $12,000, and would allow the threshold value to be adjusted every 2 years in accordance with Anchorage CPI. Second, it would require seniors who receive the sales tax exemption to be residents of the city and borough of Juneau. The Finance Committee considered this ordinance at its March 18, 2015 meeting and recommended forwarding to the full assembly for approval. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager, and I will open this up for public comment. And we have first on the list Ms. Mary Lou Sparks. And is there anybody else who wishes to speak to us on this ordinance for the seniors? Or anybody else?
Thank you, Chair. Did you want to? Do you want a time limit on this?
There's only going to be one. We'll do 5 minutes. Good evening, Ms. Bart.
Good evening, Ms. Mayor. Takes me a minute.
Yep, you're good. We're all getting there.
Yes. My name is Mary Lou Sparks. I'm currently residing at Fireweed Place on Willoughby Avenue. And I just wanted to, I do want to tell you that I am a member of the Juno Commission on Aging, but I'm here only to speak for myself. This has been a long and sometimes tedious process to arrive at these decisions on the exemptions. And I appreciate all the hard work that's been gone into this. And I am reluctant to see change, of course, one is, because these exemptions mean a great deal to those of us who have limited amount of money to live on. Everything else goes up except our income. And I think that we have to be, and I don't think that this is remarkable, that we have to be judicious about where we spend our money and how we spend our money. This applies to all of us, of course, but especially when the cost of living increases, and as I say, our income doesn't. I understand that there would be some exemptions for food for seniors, for fuel oil, for water and sewer, I believe, and there's one other exemption that escapes me.
Utilities.
Sorry?
Utilities.
Utilities, electric, I assume that means. And we appreciate that. I appreciate that. But there are other expenses that one has outside of food that are going to be taxed for us now that were not previously. And for some seniors, that will be a considerable burden. I don't think we're going to be put out into the street because of it, but it will be a chance to really be sober about our finances. The one thing that I am concerned about, having to do with this process, is a means test for seniors who will qualify for full exemption because of their income. I think this is going to be awkward, tedious, and expensive. And I would hope that the Assembly would consider a simpler way to approach this so that there would be an easier, simpler, less complicated way for both the people who are in business selling us items to understand what these rules and regulations are going to be, and for those of us who are on the other end of it. That's about it for me. I appreciate, once again, this has been, a long process. We're about ready to make a decision here, and we know that change is coming. But I'd like to have you consider one more time just how you're going to go about some of these changes.
So, Ms. Sparks, if I could explain just tonight with this ordinance here, it's to raise the cap from $7,500 to $12,000. And that's what this one does. The other, and what I would like to appreciate the Assembly to do is to take into consideration Ms. Sparks' testimony about the rest of the senior sales tax items so that she doesn't have to come back unless she wants to. She's more than welcome to, but she's talking about some of the other sales tax items that we aren't quite to yet here.
I'm always glad to be in the presence of this esteemed body.
Wow.
Ms. Troll, I think you had your hand up first, Tommy.
Just a point of clarification in that we still are dealing with this ordinance requiring that seniors who receive the sales tax exemption that they be residents.
Yes.
Of CBJ. So we still are dealing with that portion tonight. But we are indeed still working out the mechanics of the section that you were testifying to, and I very much appreciate your comments tonight.
Thank you. I have no quarrel with that.
Mr. Keel?
Ms. Troll asked my question about whether Ms. Sparks had comments on the residency requirement.
Any other questions for Ms. Sparks? Thank you very much, ma'am. Appreciate you coming down.
Thank you, everyone.
Okay. Anybody else from the public wish to comment on this one? Seeing none, I will close public comment on ordinance 2015-17 and ask for assembly action. Ms. Crane?
I would move adoption of ordinance 2015-17 and ask for unanimous consent.
I object. Okay. My objection is just to the adjusted every 2 years in accordance with the Anchorage CPI. I think that we as the assembly should be taking these taxes up on our own every couple years and doing what either we have to do with them or not, and not assigning to a number from Anchorage and doing it that way. That's my objection to it. Anything else? Any other comments? Ms. Becker.
Are you going to make a motion to remove that?
No, I'm not going to. I can't. So.
Okay, then I will. Just we'll see how people feel. Thank you. I would like to bring forth an amendment to delete the section that says and would allow the threshold value to be adjusted every 2 years in accordance with Anchorage CPI. And ask for unanimous consent.
Object.
Object.
Thanks.
Thank you. Anybody wish to speak to their objections? Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I was the maker of the motion in the committee, and I understand the issue of saying it's from Anchorage and imposed on Juneau, but Anchorage is the only place in Alaska that the federal CPI has done. It's the only one that they do. For the entire state. And so almost every index that is indexed to a consumer price index is based on the one in Anchorage because it's the only one in the state of Alaska. And secondly, I think that the assembly always has the opportunity to go back and review that make adjustments if we need to. But in this way, if we're busy doing other things, it's an automatic thing that comes forward to us. So I would speak against the motion.
Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, we have an objection to the amendment number one. And so, Madam Clerk, please read the roll.
Ms. Becker?
No.
Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Wait.
I think you're voting the wrong way. This is a motion to take that out, right?
So
you voted against your own motion, Mary?
So should we trip?
We should. I'm glad I'm not the only one being confused tonight.
When she voted against her own motion, I was very disturbed.
I actually was deliberately voting against it. I don't know if it's okay to do that.
Sure it is.
Sure. I really was voting against taking it out.
Once you had the explanation, or okay.
Yeah, I wanted us to have an opportunity to discuss it and do it if we wanted to. And I don't think it's necessary, therefore I voted no.
And so I am a no.
Okay.
Okay, so we...
Okay, Ms. Becker is a no. Ms. Crane is a no. Mr. Jones?
No.
Ms. Vladiseski?
No.
Mr. Keel?
No.
Mr. Nankervis?
Yes.
Ms. Troll?
No.
Ms. White?
Yes.
Mayor Sanford?
Yes.
Motion fails, 3A, 6A.
Thank you. Now we have before us the main motion, which is to adopt ordinance 2015-17. Any objections? I'll object. I don't need to speak to it. So if anybody else wishes to speak to it, nobody else does, please read the roll, Madam Clerk.
Okay. Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
Yes.
Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Ms. White?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Mayor Sanford?
No.
Motion carries 8-1.
All right, we'll move on to item B on our agenda. And Madam Clerk, could you please read Ordinance 2015-19, the title, please?
An ordinance establishing the rate of levies for property taxes for calendar year 2015 based upon the proposed budget for fiscal year 2016.
Thank you. Madam Manager?
The Charter requires the Assembly to adopt by ordinance the tax levies necessary to fund the budget before June 15, 2015. The mill levies presented in this ordinance support the manager's FY16 revised budget that is currently being reviewed by the Assembly Finance Committee. As part of the budget review process, the Assembly Finance Committee will review and recommend to the Assembly the final mill levies. The final mill levies must be adopted on or before June 15, 2015. This ordinance proposes a total mill levy of 10.76, which is unchanged from the FY15 total levy, and the components are which roaded service area 2.2, fire service area 0.36, area-wide operations 6.70, and debt service 1.5 for a total of 10.76. I recommend holding the Charter required public hearing for this ordinance and referring it back to the Assembly Finance Committee for further review.
Thank you, Madam Manager. And I will open this ordinance up for public comment. Does anybody in the public wish to comment on Ordinance 2015-19, which is the rate of levy for property taxes for Is there anybody in the public who wishes to comment on this ordinance? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Mr. Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move that Ordinance 2015-19 be referred back to the Assembly Finance Committee for further review.
Is there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. So we will move to item C, Ordinance 2015-20. Madam Clerk.
An ordinance appropriating funds from the Treasury for FY16 city and borough operations.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Madam Manager.
This ordinance appropriates $319,537,700 for the CBJ's FY16 operating budget, excluding the school district. It is necessary to appropriate all transfers between funds that support operations, debt service, and capital projects, as well as the associated expenditures within the funds themselves. These transfers account for $87,779,800 of the FY16 operating budget. Excluding the transfers in school district, the CBJ FY16 budget for operation, debt service, and capital projects is $228,996,200. The Charter requires that a public hearing be held on the FY16 operating budget by May 1, 2015 and adopted by June 15, 2015. I recommend holding the Charter required public hearing for this ordinance and referring it back to the Assembly Finance Committee for further review.
Thank you, Madam Manager. I will open this up for public comment. Is there anybody in the public who wishes to comment on Ordinance 2015-20? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Ms. Gladyszewski.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move Ordinance 2015-20 be referred to the Finance Committee for further review.
Is there any objections? Hearing and seeing none, so approved. We did item D. So, holy smokes. We will move to item E, Ordinance 2015-22. Madam Clerk.
an ordinance amending the traffic code relating to the minimum sentence for driving while under the influence and refusal to submit to a chemical test.
Thank you, Madam Manager.
This ordinance would amend CBJ 7210010, driving while under the influence, and 7210012, refusal to submit to chemical test, with respect to the requirements that the court require convicted persons to use an ignition interlock device as part of the minimum sentence imposed. The purpose of the amendment is to make the CBJ code consistent with state law. The table in the packet illustrates the difference between the sentence required currently specified in CBJ code versus state law. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. We'll open this up for public comment. Ordinance 2015-22. Does anybody wish to comment on this ordinance? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move approval of ordinance 2015-22. And we'd just like to ask a question.
Go ahead.
Get it on the record. There are, in both the DUI and refusal, there are, penalties for persons who had previously convicted four times. And at least on page 4 or 5, it appears that both E and F refer to previously convicted four times. Or I guess one of them is more than four times. And my question was, under state law, the third time within 10 years is a felony. This is punishment at fourth and more than four times is still a Class B misdemeanor. Under what conditions would a person get to the fourth or more than four convictions and not have fallen under the state felony rules?
It's an A misdemeanor for all of our DUI ordinances.
Okay.
And it would be outside the time period. But I have to say that these provisions are very rarely used because that doesn't happen very often. So the time that it doesn't fall within the felony provisions would be if the prior convictions are outside of the timeline within which the state recognizes the felony.
Which is 10 years, right?
Just 10 years, my recollection from being a prosecutor.
Okay.
Any other questions?
And I didn't have any objections. So.
Okay. Ms. Troll first.
Thank you. Question for Ms. Mead. So I understand the need for compatibility, but the requirements of the CBJ code are about twice as strong, as stringent as the state law. And I'm just curious as to know what the original rationale was for them to be
so stringent?
Yeah, so stringent.
I don't know what the original reasoning was, but state law requires us to be consistent with state law with respect to DUI sentencing, except with respect to, if I'm recalling correctly, forfeiture of vehicles. We can impose a forfeiture of vehicle provision where the state does not do that, or we can do it differently. But as far as the sentencing, the time of incarceration and the fines to impose and the requirement for the in-car and tachometer meter, those are required to be consistent with state law under Title 28.
Anything else, Ms. Trolls?
Nothing.
Mr. Keel, did you have your hand up?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess the question then for the city attorney, are there any remaining places where we have flexibility to have stronger sentences for DUI where we do not yet have stronger sentences for DUI?
And with respect to vehicle forfeiture, I believe that that is true.
And if I may, do our penalties with respect to vehicle forfeiture currently match state law, or are they lower?
I do not believe that we have a vehicle forfeiture ordinance. Or if we do, it's not used. So in that respect, no.
Thank you. Obviously, if state law requires that these penalties go down to match, then our hands are somewhat tied, and I will reluctantly support lowering these interlock provisions, but only reluctantly.
Okay. Thank you. Is there any other objections? Mr. Jones has lifted his objection for questions. Any others? Any other questions? Before us is the adoption of 2015-22. Is there any objections to that? Seeing none, so ordered. And the next one on our list is Ordinance 2015-23B. Madam Clerk, title, please.
An ordinance amending the Recreation Parks and Community Centers title to add a new chapter on aquatics facilities.
Thank you, Madam Manager.
The Juneau voters approved a proposition in October 2014 that read, the Assembly may establish a board of directors for the municipally owned and operated aquatic facilities and appoint members to the board. Notwithstanding the provision of Section 3.16 of this chapter, the board of this charter, the board shall derive its authority and power from the Assembly by ordinance. On February 23, 2015, the Assembly Human Resources Committee directed staff to develop an ordinance creating an aquatic empowered board and directed the city manager to create a committee to answer a list of questions from the committee. The Human Resources Committee reviewed the responses and the ordinance at its March 16, 2015 meeting and recommended boarding to the Assembly. At the April 13, 2015 meeting, the committee, the whole, approved moving ordinance with amendments to the Assembly for public hearing. Version B of the ordinance establishes the Parks and Rec Director as the aquatic facility manager and imposes a three-year sunset clause. If this ordinance is approved, a resolution abolishing the Aquatics Facility Advisory Board will be brought forward at the next regular scheduled Assembly meeting. I would like to draw your attention to the ordinance, line 22, page 1. There is a typo where we have an extra of. The line starts with a quorum of the board is present, period. Members of the board, there's another of, that of should be taken out. I recommend that this ordinance, I have no recommendation. Is this a policy decision for the Assembly?
Thank you, Madam Manager. And we will move forward to public comment. We have two people signed up. Is there anybody else besides Mr. Jim Carroll and Terry Kramer who wish to testify on the pool situation? Mr. Jim Carroll, will you come forward and give us your testimony? Good evening, Chief. How are you?
Doing fine. My name's Jim Carroll, and I live at 2020 Glacier Avenue, Old Highway, I call it. I'd like to say Mr. Stanford's standing on the tail of a fire truck right now. When he came in 1972 to this department, along with his brother, it was rather interesting with the students and teaching here. Mary Becker, I believe about 45 years ago, we sat before an assembly when it came up to a budget pool. And with the fire department, I spent 34 years, and they were here tonight. But I'm here for the pool. And I'd like to see the empowered board at least tried. I know it's been a long haul for you people. I don't know many other things, but dealing with the pool, the closure, what have you. I've used the pool since it opened in the spring of 1973 there, and it's a very nice, convenient place, and I see some assembly people are using it also. The sauna bathroom always solve your problems. But I'd like to have your empowered board give a chance. Let's see how it goes for it. I wish you the best of luck on it. Any questions?
Mr. Carroll, any questions for Mr. Carroll? Ms. Stroll.
Thanks, Mr. Carroll. So the proposal before us, it's not a straight-on empowered board. It's sort of a hybrid kind of board. So the director has got basically two bosses. And just wondering if your experience, you think that could work, or if you have an opinion about
you know, Bob
before us.
Bob Story, you know Bob.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He said, We talked about this in the sauna bath, and he asked me.
I missed that song.
That's before you went. Yes, I understand it's not really much of the power we might have been looking for. I'm here to just, let's give it a chance, you know. And I believe it's in operation for a couple of years. Am I right, Kim?
3 years.
3 years, you know. I'm saying let's give it a try on it, see what happens with it. All right?
Anybody else, Patrick? Thank you, Mr. Carroll.
Thank you.
Ms. Kramer?
Does how I vote matter whether or not I go in the sauna again?
Probably, Ms. Carroll, with knowing those people. Ms. Kramer, welcome to the Assembly.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'm here as another pool user. I'm Carrie Kramer. I live at 801 Dixon Street downtown, so the pool downtown is my hometown pool. I am a member of a group of mostly gray-haired old ladies who swim or do water exercise regularly 3 days a week, and then I also participate in another two-day-a-week group. And we find the pool the place where we can deal with our aches and pains and get some exercise. I voted for the ballot measure to allow the Assembly to consider an empowered board, and I encourage you to use your best judgment on that question. I can't answer it for you. The most important thing to me is that the pool be available to the extent community resources allow, because it's the best place I've found to exercise. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kramer. Are there any questions for Ms. Kramer? Seeing none, thank you very much, ma'am.
Thank you.
So, is there anybody else in the public who wishes to testify on this ordinance? Seeing none, public comment is closed, and we'll move forward to Assembly action. Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move Ordinance 2015-23B for purpose of discussion.
Thank you, Ms. Becker. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I have a few places that I would like to see some corrections. The first couple of pages seem okay to me. The third page seems okay to me. The fourth page seems okay to me. When we get to the fifth page, trying to keep looking at what the Eagle Crest Board, Empowered Board, does, I think that probably this 6710070 is taking away some of the Empowered Board type of characteristics. So I would move an amendment to this, to this section, 6710070, and keep the first sentence, Chief Executive Officer should be Parks and Recreation Department Director. Delete the section that is deleted. When it gets to the part that starts personnel action, keep this section to say, personnel actions regarding the Parks and Recreation Department Director, including hiring, evaluation, discipline, and termination, shall be after consultation with the Aquatics Board.
I object.
Thank you. So this is amendment number one. Mr. Jones, you want to speak to your objection?
Yes. I spent quite a bit of time thinking about this when I was discussing the changes with the attorney. And while I can understand, I guess, in a way, the desire here, my assumption, and I know it's always dangerous making assumptions, but that the city manager would consult with the Aquatics Board. I assume the city manager would consult with the Parks and Rec Advisory Committee, which is an advisory to us. We just approved the Treadwell Advisory Board. I would assume the city manager would consult with them. They also are an advisory to us. This seems to me to be giving I don't know if it's undue deference to one group within the purview of the Parks and Rec director over several other groups that could also be consulted. A little bit of the tail wagging the dog in my mind. I'm not sure if I will prevail in my objection, but I guess I would like to see it given a try. Knowing the city manager and the Parks and Rec director, that would get worked out. But I'm going to maintain my objection.
Thank you. Ms. Crane.
I was going to also offer an amendment here. I don't want to go quite as far as Ms. Becker. I would have kept all of the deleted area here, and I would have added a sentence that says that the empowered board shall submit a performance evaluation for the Parks and Recreation Director annually to the Director of Human Resources, because that person is working for the empowered board, and so would have a performance evaluation from the city manager for the portion of that job that falls under there, and then have another evaluation by the board, because that person is also working for the board.
So, Ms. Crane, and I don't know whether...
So I'm going to vote against Ms. Becker's amendment, but just telling you that I have an intention of adding another one to that section.
Okay. Ms. White.
I'm still trying to understand, this is supposed to be, this isn't an advisory board, this is an empowered board, and it seems like, I don't understand, maybe Law can speak to this, shouldn't we have like a template that's for empowered board and a template that's for advisory and be consistent with each one, rather than trying to hybridize every single one, because it seems like it'd be harder to keep track of who's supposed to do what and what the rules are if each and every board has its own special set of rules. It just doesn't read like an empowered board to me. It reads like an advisory board.
Law department, go ahead.
Whether or not we have a consistent way that we deal with these types of boards is really a policy call for the assembly to make.
Mm-hmm.
But there is one comment that I feel you need to have as you consider this amendment, and that is to keep in mind that personnel actions are confidential as a matter of law, which means that the city manager could not discuss personnel actions, termination, or disciplinary actions related to the Parks and Rec director with the Aquatics Board at all. The other problem is that the Parks and Rec director has a bigger scope of duties than just the aquatics facility, and so the piece that the aquatics facility would have to have input on with respect to the evaluation would need to be limited
to
the aquatics board. Mm-hmm. But the discussion of the evaluation piece can certainly, there's no legal impediment to there being at least a one-way discussion, not a two-way discussion. But discipline and termination could not be part of what the manager could legally discuss with the board, especially as the board has no authority to hire or fire. So you've been told with respect to personnel actions related to CBJ employees that those could not be discussed with this body except to the extent that it impacts your evaluation of the city manager. And that would be true, that the same would hold true for the board.
May I follow up?
Go ahead, Ms. White.
So this revised one, if you were to put it side by side with the Eagle Crest, do you feel like it's similar to that? I'm just trying to look empowered board to empowered board. I'm just seeing no, what little I could find, it just seemed like it was a completely different.
The main difference, this creates something completely new in the city, and really the only difference is with respect to the role of the staff person or the CEO or director or whatever you want to call it of whatever area the board is has the duty to oversee. So we do not have in any other, with respect to any other enterprise, a situation where the director, the port director, or the airport manager, or the Eagle Crest manager is an employee of the city manager. They are employees of the board. So this is a new thing.
Ms. Becker.
I have two different kinds of questions. When I read the empowered board for Eagle Crest, the language of hiring, evaluation, discipline, and termination, in my recollection, was in there giving that authority to the Eagle Crest board. I'm not sure why this all of a sudden giving that authority to the aquatics board is any different than the Eagle Crest.
Because of the director? Yeah, because the parks and director has more duties than just related to the aquatics facility.
So because of the hybrid of it, it's different.
But I don't know how it puts the director in a bad spot when it says regarding the director, including hiring and so forth, to the aquatic board. Is that saying only because if you want to hire or fire someone, the director, and not the other staff of the pool?
So the boards only have the authority to hire, fire, discipline, etc. Their direct report, which is the airport manager or the Eagle Crest manager. In this case, though, the Parks and Rec director is an employee of the CBJ under the supervision of the manager. And we can't codify a situation where there could be direction from two governing entities dictating what happens to one employee. So, for example, if the board were very happy with the Parks and Rec director, but the manager found that the Parks and Rec director was needed to be disciplined or terminated, that would be a conflict that could not be resolved if it's laid out in the way that's being suggested in the code, where they both have the authority to take those employment actions.
So, Madam Law, this sentence then is illegal. In your opinion, that we can't put this into effect legally.
We cannot. The personal actions cannot be discussed outside of the beyond where they're allowed to be discussed. So no, in this case, it would not be legal for the city manager to discuss an employment action related to the Parks and Rec director if it had something to do outside of the board's scope of authority. And even then, because the board does not have the authority to take personnel action against the employee, in this case the Parks and Rec director, it's not clear to me whether they could even be apprised of the personnel action.
That's not mine.
No,
it's not mine.
Oh, isn't that pretty strong?
Yes, it is. Any other questions or comments down the road? So basically what we did was is we made a hybrid empowered board thing here that really isn't an empowered board. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I agree. This is not the empowered board. In a large respect, Eagle Crest, the airport, docks, hospital are all slightly different. We deal with their budgets differently. We deal with appropriations differently. But I would just remind us that as the manager put in her staff report, the powers and duties of any board are established by the assembly. And, you know, at least version B is an establishment of powers. It lays out the assembly's desires for what this board to be. And so in that sense, we are delegating certain powers to the board, and and that, in my mind, makes it an empowered board, but it is different. But each board does get their powers from the assembly, and that's what this ordinance does, not unlike any other ordinance.
Thank you, Mr. Earls. Mr. Keel.
Well, thank you, Mr. Mayor. I definitely think there's no question this is an empowered board.
It is what? Sorry.
This is an empowered board. It's not the Eagle Crest board. It's not the Docks and Harbors board. I don't have any problem with avoiding the weaknesses and building off the strengths of some of our other boards when we create this one. It doesn't bother me at all. But there's no question that this, as it's structured here, is an empowered board. It manages the operations and marketing of the pools. It sets the regulations for the pools. It sets the terms under which groups and organizations can use the pools. And above all else, it approves the budget, or the budget that is submitted to the assembly for the pools. And if you control the flow of the money, frankly, you control what government does and doesn't do. So it doesn't have to be a board with the power to hire and fire its very own director and buy its very own toys each and every single time to be an empowered board. We can, and I think on the whole this ordinance does, learn from past weaknesses and avoid them while building on some of the strengths we can get. So just to bring it right back to the amendment, because I appreciate the leeway and you've given all of us in our discussion here to get off the amendment a little bit. I think that the city attorney has pointed out some legal problems with the amendment. I would also point out that the way this amendment is written, if you have a Parks and Rec director who's directly responsible for burning down Mount Jumbo Gym, you can't fire him without checking with the pool board, and that doesn't really work. So I'm going to oppose the amendment.
Okay, Ms. Crane.
Based on what Ms. Mead has said, I will drop my comment about putting in another amendment. There's a lot about this ordinance that I like and a lot that I don't like. I would not have voted for an empowered board the way the first ordinance went through. I think there's compromise here from the people who wanted the empowered board, from a number of us. We have a sunset clause. We can see what works here. A year into this, if there are problems, we can come back and we can take a look at it again. I think that this ordinance meets the needs primarily of the people who wanted the empowered board and addresses the concerns of those of us who had some problem with the issue. And so for me, it is a compromise, and if it works, fine, and if it doesn't, we can take other
Okay,
actions.
Let's speak straight to the amendment here and get it out of our way, if we could, please. Anything else, Ms. Troll?
My comment isn't to the amendment, so.
It isn't?
It's not.
Okay.
No.
Anybody else on Amendment 1? Madam Lawyer, you said that this is illegal, so we shouldn't even vote on this amendment. How do we withdraw and get it off the table?
The whole of the amendment is not legal. There is the hiring piece is potentially okay, but it would be Ms. Becker to withdraw the motion to amend.
May I ask a clarification question again? Just to make sure I'm clear about this, you have said that the reason we can't put this burden of all of this onto the Aquatics Board is because it is it's the Parks and Rec Director that has a shared job with, okay? If, in fact, then we can't talk about personnel matters, so how is the city manager ever going to know if the Aquatics Board cannot talk about personnel matters?
It's not the talking about the personnel action, it's the taking of a disciplinary action, or the decision to fire someone, or the decision to put someone on an improvement plan. It's a personnel action taken against an employee, disciplinary action, or the decision to terminate. Those types of things cannot be discussed. If the pool board is having an issue with the Parks and Rec director, there's nothing that would prohibit the pool board from having a discussion with the city manager and making that known or asking that there be some way to redress it or whatever. That's not prohibited.
I think that becomes the conflict of empowered board versus not empowered board. But if it's not legal, that's how that goes, if it isn't. So I will withdraw my motion due to a legality question.
All right. Amendment 1 has been withdrawn. Ms. Becker? Next item.
Well, thank you. The 671080. So I believe that the first part is okay. And then going down to number 4, it seems, I'm not sure I understand why we would not want our director to be at our meetings. So what I was going to suggest is to put it back in, to attend all meetings of the Aquatics Board and its standing committees unless otherwise, and its standing committee not otherwise conflicting with other duties of the position of Parks and Rec. It's kind of protecting the dual role. And so I think we need to have that person coming to the meetings, and as long as it's not conflicting with other duties of that person's position, it seems like that's something that should be done. So that is my motion.
Amendment 2 is before us.
Could you restate exactly what it
What's
is, please?
Okay. To attend all meetings of the Aquatics Board and its standing committees, not otherwise conflicting with other duties of the position of Parks and Rec.
Ms. Becker? May I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
This says they must attend, the way I hear you, the person must attend every meeting, even if the board doesn't want them there. So I think there needs to be a clause that says, except as otherwise directed by the board, and because you deleted the part about except as otherwise directed by the board, the way I hear it.
And I should not have deleted
that.
Okay,
thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes. Yeah. So thank you, Ms. Jaskowski, for putting that back in, because I agree that it should be there.
Any other comments? Okay, amendment number 2 is before us.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
I'm not sure I'm going to object, because I think this is putting in place common sense. The reason I had originally taken it out was I felt that to not attend the meetings just wouldn't happen. So I guess I just think that it's overkill to put it in here that we have to put in statute a requirement that you attend the meetings of it, of the Parks and Rec or of the Aquatics Board. I would assume also that a person not attending was either because the board was displeased and told them not to, or there was some conflict, and that would be a red flag that would start popping up. So I guess I will object to the amendment just simply because I just don't think it's necessary to be in an ordinance.
Thank you. Anything else we have objected? Anybody else? Questions? We have before us amendment number 2. Madam Clerk, everybody know which way they want to vote? Yes or no? Yes in, no out? Okay. Madam Clerk, go ahead.
Okay. Ms. Gladyszewski?
No.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankervis?
Yes.
Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Ms. White?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
No.
Mayor Sanford?
Yes.
Motion carries.
Ms. Becker, anything else?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Mayor. And let's see if I'm in the right spot here. Nope, that one we've already taken care of. I think that's all, Mr. Mayor. We already took care of that. Okay. It was in the wrong space.
Is there any other amendments to the aquatics boards? And who moved it, Mr. Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would amend my motion, I guess, to approve serial number 2015-23B as amended, and would ask unanimous consent.
I object.
And I object for purposes of, I'd like to have ask a few questions on the whole ordinance.
Go ahead, Ms. Troll.
What I've been trying to wrap my mind around is how does this really work? I understand the spirit of compromise, and I appreciate that and all the work that goes in. But, you know, the part that I have to try and wrestle with is where it says to be responsible for carrying out policies established by the Aquatics Board, not in conflict with policies established or adopted by the Assembly or manager. So if the Aquatics Board wants to reduce the cost and say we're only going to have 5 lifeguards, but because of our need to protect health and safety and because of our liability and our insurance, you know, the manager says, no, we need to continue to have 7 lifeguards. How does that get sorted out? I mean, does that then mean we, the Assembly, get involved in those types of decisions, or?
I hope not. But
you know, it's not my desire to do that. So.
Specific ordinances and specific laws overrule, if you will, general concepts. So in this case, the board is given specific authority by ordinance. The manager cannot overrule the board on those areas where the board is given the authority and duty to oversee. So if the board is given within their scope of duties the job to oversee the running of the pool, the manager could not overrule a board decision on how the pool is run. That section that you were referring to was trying to put into place a provision codifying the concept that if the managers were to set a policy applicable citywide, that the Parks and Rec director was expected to comply with, the board could not direct the Parks and Rec director to do something different, because that section is all about what the Parks and Rec director's duties are as the aquatics facilities manager. So the board could not direct that person to do something that was in conflict with a policy established by this assembly or the manager.
Follow up, Ms. Stroll?
I'm just trying to think about how that works in the scenario that I presented out.
The manager has no authority.
Would not have any authority to say.
Mr. Jones first.
Thank you. I agree the manager wouldn't have a say, and to speak specifically to Ms. Troll's example, I think if you go to page 3, if you look on lines 9 and 10, like all of our departments, Bartlett, the Haas, the airport, docks and harbors, they all carry either special insurance or they're part of the risk pool. If the board, the empowered board, wanted to operate with 5 lifeguards, they carry an extra pool insurance. If that insurance overrider says that's not a safe number, if our city risk management says that's not a safe number, the board can't override that anyway. So if we're talking about an empowered board or any board that has the authority to make certain decisions. There are certain decisions they can't make, and those are decisions that go against the policies that this assembly adopts or goes against any risk that we have tried to get people to make sure that we're not creating risk. Those kinds of things go on all the time. And I get this feeling as this has progressed through here that some people think the empowered board can do certain things. They're still bound by the rules of the city. The mayor continues to remind us that we're all part of the city, whether it's the hospital board or the airport board or anybody else. And I think the empowered board for the aquatics needs to realize that there are going to be rules that are going to perhaps stymie them in their mind. And I think they need to work through that like everybody else works through that. And the example of the number of lifeguards, I think that's more of a risk management issue. It's not whether the city manager orders it or the Parks and Rec director orders it. You know, if they can't get past the risk management issues, then that's just something the board's going to have to deal with. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Ms. White.
Okay, let me see if I can get my thought back. because it makes this, the way this is worded, and that's why I was asking about maybe some of the others, and I apologize for not going through the other ordinances that created empowered boards, but do we have empowered boards that are allowed to go against what the city manager said? Or, so we do. Okay, so because it's like, what problem are we trying to fix, I guess, was my first thing, because I'll just be another second, because I still, when I read this, it seems more like an advisory board. A lot of the questions that were brought up said, well, this is like an advisory board, it does this. It's supposed to be an empowered board. I understand everybody says this is a compromise, but the voters said they wanted an empowered board. Yes, they have the responsibility of setting the budget, setting the regulations, but they have nothing to back it up. They've had their teeth pulled. So, I guess. I mean, they don't have the teeth to back it up.
The only, legally, this is not, I have nothing to say on the policy call, but legally, the difference between this ordinance and the other enterprise boards is only with respect to how the CEO or the executive officer or employee of the board, in this case not the employee of the board, operates. Mm-hmm. And what we have to take out were provisions that created a conflict between the board and the manager. That we could not have an employee who had two different masters, if you will, such that mm-hmm. the employee could be getting different direction, because we would be setting up that employee to fail at some point or another. And that's mm-hmm. what we had to avoid codifying, because then we would be subject to potential employment liability if we created a situation where someone suffered an adverse employment action because of an ordinance that we adopted. So that is the main difference between the duties that are outlined in the other ordinances with respect to some of the other boards and this one.
Any other comments or questions? So I would like to turn the gavel over to Deputy Mayor Becker so I can speak to this.
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. And my objection to this goes back to the two masters situation. And this is not an empowered board. This is a hybrid thing that we're trying to do to get us all to be able to vote for it. And that's what it exactly boils down to. So there's no compromise here. Or if you happen to believe in an empowered board and what the empowered board can do for the aquatics facilities, then that's what you believe. And we should keep it in line with the empowered boards that we have. And this has veered away from that, at least in one-third of its action, and has given us a lame duck board, in my mind, and that's the reason why I'm going to vote no on it. So the lines of authority are not clear enough. the two masters thing is very important to me, and I just think that we're putting our director of Parks and Rec in a terrible spot. And I know that probably with the director that we have right now and probably with our city manager we have right now, they'd be able to talk these things out. But I don't know about the next person. We shouldn't be doing things, in my mind, around people, but around a job specifically. So that's my objection. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Can I take it back? Thank you, Ms. Mayor. All right, anybody else? So we have before us no more amendments. We have Mr. Jones's proposal to adopt 2015-23B as amended one time. Is there any objection? I still hold my objection. Ms. Madam Clerk, please read the roll.
Mr. Keel?
Yes.
Mr. Nankerva?
Yes.
Ms. Troll?
Yes.
Ms. White?
Yes.
Ms. Becker?
Yes.
Ms. Crane?
Yes.
Mr. Jones?
Yes.
Ms. Gladyszewski?
Yes.
Mayor Sanford?
No.
Motion carries 8-1.
All right. So there was a note here saying something about our next step in this thing. Something will come before us to do away with the advisory board, Madam Manager?
Correct. We will bring forward a resolution abolishing the Aquatics Facility Advisory Board.
Okay. Any other comments or questions about this? Ladies, are you leaving?
Yes.
Stay right there for just 1 second, please. I'm going to interrupt our meeting a little bit here to give them their certificate.
Tell me one thing each one of you will take away from this evening.
Just one. That's easy.
You can't do two things at once.
Oh, okay. I guess for me, it would be seeing the younger kids testify and seeing them.
Being younger than Mr. Keel?
Seeing them in my spot in about 10 years and just wondering what it's going to be like for them. So, yeah, that was definitely really moving to watch them. And I mean, it's kind of sad, but at the same time, I don't know, it's kind of scary. But, yeah, I definitely remember being that age. And so don't think I was ever worried about school budget when I was about, like, 10 years old. But, I mean, good for them for being involved. That was definitely cool to watch.
Has this been a good experience for you?
Yeah. Yes.
Well, thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for having
coming.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you for the indulgence, Assembly members. Let me see if I can find where we're at. Okay, we're on page 9. Item G. Madam Clerk, please read the title.
Yes. An ordinance authorizing a capital improvement by agreement related to the construction and maintenance of improvements on Dunn Street.
Thank you, Madam Manager.
This non-code ordinance would authorize the manager to enter into a capital improvements by agreement contract with the Dunn Street property owners. The property owners of Dunn Street first approached the CBA with a request to form a paving local improvement district in 2013 for their non-CBJ maintained road. The Assembly Public Works and Facilities Committee approved a 50% cost split for the road paving in June 2014. A portion of the total cost was appropriated for the FY15 CIP, $250,000, and the Dunn Street property owners disputed the 50% cost split for the project. The issue was revisited at the March 23, 2015 Public Works and Facilities Committee meeting, where the following concepts were approved by the Public Works and Facilities Committee. Dunn Street property owners will contribute a total of $50,000 for the paving improvements to the Dunn Street. The CBJ complete the roadway improvements, including paving, road base, curb, gutter, storm drain, and water system. The CBJ agrees to maintain the asphalt pavement and the underground storm drain system within the Dunn Street right-of-way, and the Dunn Street property owners will continue to be responsible for snow removal and winter maintenance of the Dunn Street right-of-way. CBJ 15-10-290 provides that the Assembly may authorize a contract for provisions of improvements. This ordinance would authorize the manager to enter into the proposed agreement consistent with the recommendations from the Public Works and Facilities Committee, including with your ordinance tonight. The owners have voiced their opposition to portions of the draft agreement. They object to the recitals in general. They want a deadline for the completion of CBJ's work. They object to the provision of a lien for failure to pay owner's share of the work and winter maintenance obligations. They object to providing full winter maintenance as stated in the whereas section of the ordinance, specifically the requirement that they sand or salt the roadway in addition to snow plowing. They object to the requirement that an owner's association be created prior to the conveyance of any property. They request that the CBJ indemnify them for use of the roadway, and they object to the severability clause. This non-court ordinance would authorize the manager to enter into a capital improvement agreement contract with the Dunn Street property owners consistent with the recommendations from the Public Works and Facilities Committee. If the owners and the CBJ cannot come to agreement on the contract would not be signed. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. And can we have, is there anybody in the public who wishes to comment on this particular ordinance? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Assembly action, Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move we adopt ordinance 2015-25 and ask for unanimous consent.
Mr. Nankervis.
I object.
Thank you. Want to speak to your...
I would like to, Mr. Mayor. Thank you very much. This was before the Public Works and Facilities Committee, and it passed out of the committee after we had testimony from the public on this. Some background on this, the project was about a $400,000 project, of which that it was originally designated the property owners would pay for just under $100,000, which was just under 25%. This is a little bit different than many of our, what we would call an LID here, and that this is a publicly permitted right-of-way. But it's private. No, I'm going to say that wrong. It's not a city street. I can say that. All right. I get that one out of my mouth, right? It's not a city street. So it doesn't fall into the categories we normally get where we look at an LID, which I believe are normally 70-30, how we do most LIDs. This would be a $400,000 project or basically $50,000. So on the face of it, I think we are being too generous with this personally. They are getting a $400,000 project for 50 grand, and they came and testified, and I thought that's what they wanted. But in addition to me thinking it's too good a deal, as you can see, they're not happy with the contract that came out. So I object to adopting this ordinance.
Ms. Crane.
For those reasons. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
I have a question for the attorney to start with. Why are we proposing a contract here when we don't normally do that for an LID?
This is not an LID. This is a capital improvement by agreement, which is a specific, it's something that is allowed by our charter and by ordinance. And what it is a contractual agreement between the CBJ and all of the owners of the benefited property to do certain work.
Well, I think there's some room for negotiation here. I mean, they want a deadline for completion of the CBJ's work. You could say if this project is not done by the 31st of October, this agreement dissolves unless mutually extended. I don't know that we have to require them to put sand or salt in the roadway. That was never discussed at Public Works. We said they would do winter snow removal, et cetera. So I think that there's some agreement there. Some of their objections, I think, are ridiculous. But some of them, I think there's some room for a little bit of discussion here. And, you know, I mean, we're not going to indemnify them for use of the roadway. Obviously, we're not going to do that. I don't, you know, do we have to have a requirement that an owner's association is created prior? Because if they go to sell one of those pieces of property, that payment goes with the property. They have to disclose that.
It's not the payment piece, it's the obligation to do the winter maintenance piece. So that's why we're requiring the homeowners association, so that the future owners are also obligated to do the winter maintenance.
Can't you just put something in there without having to do an owner's association is a much bigger document than just saying any future sales must include the agreement for X?
It has to be something where one owner can't refuse to sign or agree to be bound and then frustrates the intent of the capital improvement by agreement. So that's why our recommendation is that stay in. That piece is pretty important. As far as the other things that you're talking about, those aren't legal questions. So,
as I say, I would, rather than voting against this, I would table it and say, you know, the assembly is not going to go along with a request to indemnify the use of the roadway, or let's discuss these and see if there isn't some area for some compromise here.
And maybe the recommendation could be, Ms. Green, is to send it back so staff can get an agreement signed before it comes to us instead of having this.
Right.
I don't think we can even vote on this.
No. I know Public Works is trying to get this out and get it done this season, but I'd hate to see the whole agreement go away over some things that could potentially be negotiated and could act on.
So this is not something that staff can negotiate for you, because we took what Public Works passed off on and put that into the agreement. So we don't have any, I am uncomfortable negotiating a contract without having specific direction about what it is you want to change and what would be agreeable. So if it went back to Public Works or someone else who you're comfortable making that decision and giving direction. But for example, I know that my understanding is that Mr. Watt was reluctant to specify a completion date and had a reason for that. I would not be in the position then to negotiate whether or not the city should agree to one.
Mr. Jones.
I guess I'm struggling here a little bit because as I go through sort of their objections, I was trying to find where some of their objections were. I mean, the absence of a completion date, that's not part of the ordinance, right? I mean, that's not in the ordinance at all, that we wouldn't do that. It's not in the ordinance to require them to put down salt or sand.
The ordinance adopts the agreement that would be signed. That's Exhibit A to the ordinance, and that's where those provisions are.
Okay.
Yep. And I guess maybe we're missing the boat here a little bit. Full winter maintenance could include putting down sand and or de-icer like we do, the city does on our streets. And I think that's where that came from engineering and Public Works, is what is full winter maintenance. They agreed they're going to take care of at full winter maintenance. And these are the items that we do. Now they have to do them if it's necessary. So that's where that comes from. Ms. Becker and then Ms. Gray.
I just have a question for whomever. Have they refused to sign the contract?
They've objected to certain provisions of the contract.
So they've just, okay, so they have refused to sign it with those provisions. So
Ms. Gray.
We talked about doing winter maintenance. We never, at the Public Works meeting, we never went into detail about full winter maintenance or what winter maintenance means. So there was no discussion at the Public Works meeting of whether this included salt and sand or not. They agreed to do winter maintenance. So I think there's some room for some discussion here, but it's a very short.
It's going to have to be spelled out. That's the reason for this, for sure. Mr. Keel, I think you had your hand up.
No, I was thinking it too close to the microphone. Apparently you heard me. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Let me start out with, do we have anything, there's nothing in the packet. Do we have anything in writing from the property owners with their objections?
There was an email that Mr. Harris forwarded to the engineering department, the engineering and public works department, that appeared to be a discussion between him and somebody else where there are certain objections and things, and I outlined those in the manager's report.
Okay.
Those were the objections. There was nothing more specific or formal than that.
Do you wish Mr. Watt to speak to that, Mr.?
I would love that. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Watt, please join us.
I was just coming for the better view.
That must be of the mayor, because nobody wants to look at this thing.
I think what Ms. Mead is saying is that since the assembly is part of the negotiation, it would be tricky for staff to negotiate with Mr. Harris and the other owner without a good understanding of sidebars. So let me throw some out and see if we can get some general approval of what could be on the table. And I'll just go through their bullet points. They don't like the recitals. I don't really care. But they tell the story for somebody in the future, which is going to be the future property owners that want to understand how come they have to plow their road. So as long as there's a vehicle that explains that to the future owners, that can resolve. A deadline for the city's work. If they do this agreement, fair enough that we can't sit on it forever. So if there's room to state our intentions and completion dates and come to some terms with that, and they get the understanding that we're going to do it as soon as we can and not sit on this for a couple of years. So fair enough. And we've put forward appropriations towards that end. With regard to a lien, unless they want to pay cash for their portions up front, there needs to be a lien or some other financing mechanism. And if they can create another financing mechanism, I'm sure we'll be all ears for that. With regard to full winter maintenance, I think the idea at Public Works and Facilities was you take care of it in the winter and you be responsible. Now, whether sand and salt should be applied,
may I say that?
Of course. You're my lawyer.
There is a provision in the subdivision ordinance that is coming your way that allows for privately maintained access roads, which would be, this is what this is. The decision that you make about the extent of the owner's obligation to maintain that street needs to be equally applied. So if you were to allow whatever you are going to allow here, there is going to be an argument from other developers and other people maintaining privately maintained access roads to do the same thing. So whatever you decide is your decision, but just know that it has greater applicability potentially if we decide to have privately maintained access roads in this CBJ.
Thank you. Don't we already?
We do.
We do not have privately maintained access roads in subdivisions that are in as are envisioned under the new subdivision ordinance.
Where, as envisioned
where
there,
developer
but...
can put in, where subdivider can put in a new subdivision.
Ms. Crane, instead of being, you know something we don't know.
Andrianov.
Yeah.
You know, that's a privately maintained road. They fought to keep it that way.
Three separate ones, three separate associations. You have Coview on the north end. I forget the name of the other two.
There are subdivisions that came into creation before we had improvement standards. Since we have had improvement standards related to the subdivision of property, we have not allowed privately maintained access roads to a subdivision.
Hmm. Mr. Mayor, it was all I could do to keep off the subdivision ordinance.
Ms. Glenniff, yes?
I'm struggling with understanding why this is here. So the Dunn Street owners wanted something. They got DLA, which was
pretty good.
And then they said, oh, no, give us a better deal. And we said, okay. And now they object to the better deal, and we're struggling with what to give them or not. If they don't like it, why? I don't understand why we're here at the assembly right now. Shouldn't this go back to Public Works? This just seems like it's a detailed thing that...
It ain't coming back to HRC. We've had too many.
And why are we here? Want it. They wanted it. They don't want it. Do they want it?
Mr. Watt, go ahead.
Mr. Mayor, I would like to briefly answer Ms. Gladyshevsky's question and then continue a bit through this. I think what we're talking about is trying to implement the will of Public Works and Facilities, and there's some gray area in there. And if we send it back to committee, it's going to take more time. And I think the goal is to make a decision, make a deal, move on, improve that road for the benefit of the public and those businesses. And I think we're close. And if we could just suffer through this a little bit longer, I think we might get enough direction from the Assembly to make some progress on it. Okay. On winter maintenance, so the deal that we envisioned was you take care of it in the winter, and we'll take care of it in the summer. We'll take care of the asphalt, the sweeping, cleaning out the storm drain, and all that. And we didn't specify what take care of it in the winter was with regard to sand and salt. That's true. And I think we projected what we would do to reduce our liability. I think as long as they're clearly responsible for that winter maintenance, and as long as they clearly have insurance against their efforts, we shouldn't be specifying the details of that winter maintenance. So I think there is room to talk about what that means. I think there's an opportunity there. With regard to owners association, again, I would say there needs to be a vehicle that will endure to carry out their side of the agreement. And if they have a proposal that can be a substitute for owners association, we would be all ears to that, but it needs to endure so that we don't have a property owner 2 years from now saying, wait a minute, I wasn't part of that deal. I bought my property. I didn't know. So we need some vehicle for that. CBJ indemnifying them, I think, is silly. And severability is, lawyers love that kind of stuff. And I would leave it in there.
Yes. Who's next? Mr. Jones.
Thank you. In regards to the sort of a association, I sort of go back to the housing. When we were talking about housing issues, and one of the issues that came before us was financing for condos. And one of the barriers to financing for condos was that a lot of the condo associations have sort of disbanded themselves. And it made it very hard for financers to finance an individual buyer if there was no protection around that buyer to the common areas. And I would ask the attorney is, you know, under if, since there's seven properties here, seven lots, there's only two owners. One owner owns six and the dentist owns the seventh or whatever the number of lots are. If the owner of the other six sold one, what is his obligation to disclose either obligations to whoever comes in and buys that singular property, now becomes the third member of this? What are their obligations to say, you know, you have to put money in the pool to plow the snow in the wintertime and stuff like that?
It would be recorded, so it would follow. A title search would uncover it.
Without having to do any association. If I went in to buy that and I went to a bank to borrow it, in the title search there would be something that came up that there's another financial obligation. If the seller didn't tell me, I would find out through the title process that I might be responsible for an extra $20,000 a year.
The winter maintenance obligation would be disclosed via that vehicle.
Okay. Maybe. Well, there's also some rules that real estate people have to disclose that kind of stuff under penalty of losing their license. I'm sure Ms. White could talk about that.
Oh, yeah, I'm sitting here jittering. I know.
Mr. Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Watt, a couple of things I've forgotten from Public Works and Facilities packets I read when they looked at this. Is there sewer under here? I keep seeing reference to putting in storm, water lines. Nothing says sewer.
There's water and sewer, both municipal.
So we should probably, as we go forward, reference the sewer and who maintains that. But Mr. Nankervis mentioned the split between, I don't want to say LID, but between property owners and city. I think, if memory serves me right, I've only seen one of these things once before in my time on the assembly, and people commented that the split was pretty rich by our standards back then. It's a great deal richer. What's the split in your estimates here between utilities, you know, the storm and the whatever we're doing underneath, and the asphalt, the paving part? 50-50, 10% asphalt, 90% utilities, or other?
Hopefully the committee members can help me out. I think what we did was we assumed all of the water and sewer were city costs, and we think the sewer is in good shape, but the water needs some repair, and that was the appropriation ordinance that Mr. Nankervis referenced earlier. So that's out of the project cost that we were talking about for the owners. And then we had the curb, storm drain, subbase, asphalt. And I think we assumed another 100,000 of that would be city costs, and of the remaining 200, we proposed splitting it 50-50, which led to the staff proposal of 100 for the property owners and about 300 for the city. And the owners commented that that was too much and they couldn't really afford that. So the brokered deal at committee was to split that 100 again in half to 50,000. So it's about a $400,000 project of owner contributions, about 50.
Okay. And Mr. Mayor, just to go on, you also used the term about the owners having an insurance, and we don't necessarily have to specify what winter maintenance means as long as we know they have insurance. That doesn't say that in any of these attachments. It says they got to indemnify the city, but it doesn't say they're ever going to show us a certificate of insurance. So we actually don't know how deep the pocket would ever be if somebody slid on an inadequately maintained Dunn Street in the wintertime, right? So put those things all together, and I don't think I'm there. And I'd be happy to see further proposal of some kind from staff at our next assembly meeting, but I can't support it tonight.
Mr. Jones,
I was just going to say what Mr. Watt said. I think the decision was there was about $225,000, and for the right-of-way where the water was, that was going to be totally the city's part, and then basically what was remaining was the city was going to take on 75%, roughly. The $50,000 is what the owners got. I think that was the motion that was made. I'm not sure we considered everything else that's in this agreement in that, but I guess I'm with Mr. Keel and Ms. Crane. I think, you know, if they've got enough to go back and renegotiate and come back with an agreement that the property owners are agreed to and bring it back before us, I'm more comfortable with that than approving this tonight.
Just one question for Mr. Watt. Number three, or the third bullet on page 9, is this saying that there's a lien if you don't pay your share, there's a lien if you don't do your winter maintenance obligation?
I need better direction where you are.
Page 9.
The agreement?
The third bullet.
No, manager's report.
Agenda.
Oh, the agenda. Yeah,
right.
Agenda. Where
there's
the objections, they have
their
oppositions.
Okay, page 9.
Bottom four bullets.
Oh, they object to the provision of a lien for failure to pay owner's share of the work and winter maintenance obligations.
You're never going to be finished with the lien then, because as long as you live there, there's winter obligations. So I could see why they would protest that one.
The lien, as I understand it, would be for their portion of the capital improvement by agreement. So they, if they wanted to get rid of the lien, they could pay it up front.
I understand that part. I'm talking about the maintenance obligations. Is there a lien if they don't do their winter, failure to do the winter maintenance obligation?
The third bullet there.
The third?
And I know it says that in the third bullet, but I don't think it says that in the agreement. Mm-hmm.
That's their complaint, so they must feel that that's one of your obligations, one of your conditions for the lien. Well, anyway, I absolutely agree that this is not ready to go anywhere. So,
do you have enough answers to carry forward or not, Mr. White?
We'll do the best we can.
Mm-hmm. If I need to withdraw my motion, I will withdraw my motion. I'm stuck at voting, I guess.
Thank you.
So I would move that we table this.
Thank you, Ms. Crane. Is there any objections to tabling this till we get some sort of agreement? Hearing none, so order. Okay, we'll move to
Mr. Mayor.
Yes, ma'am. Let's time out. I heard a timeout. Let's take a
little bit of a
5 to 10 minute recess here.
Juno Jazz and Classics, Juno's May celebration of music, brings the Cajun swing of the Revelers. Their fiery tone, unshakable groove, and outrageous musical chops will get your heart pumping and your feet moving. It's a Louisiana jukebox dance party with the Revelers at the Jack. Saturday, May 2nd at 7:30. Check out the program. Tickets at jazzandclassics.org, the Jack, Hearthside Books, and at the door.
Programming support comes from ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
As a parent, you may be exploring the advantages of homeschooling. Consider HomeBridge, a program of the Juneau School District offering involvement in extracurricular activities within the district. HomeBridge allows up to 2 classes at local schools with no allotment reduction. HomeBridge is now accepting enrollments for the 2015-2016 school year. For more information, call 523-1821 or find us under HomeBridge on the Juneau School District website.
And you are tuned to KTOO FM in Juneau, Alaska. The time is 9:20. We've been listening to the CBJ assembly meeting, and they're currently taking a short break. Rest of tonight, rain likely late, mainly south of the Mendenhall Valley, lows around 39. Tuesday, rain in the morning, then rain showers in the afternoon, highs around 48. Tuesday night, windy in the evening, rain showers, lows around 41. Wednesday, rain showers, highs around 48. And Thursday, numerous rain showers, highs around 47. And I'm going to put on some more of the Big Bad Voodoo Daddy Band, which is going to be playing in the Juno Jazz and Classics Finale and Dance Party on May 16th, 7:30 at Centennial Hall.
If you'd like to keep up with the variety of activities, people, and events in the capital city, you'll want to tune into a Juno Afternoon. Find out about concerts, meetings, events, classes, and speakers that add vitality to our community. Get to know your fellow residents. Plan your schedule. learn what's going on and how you can be involved. Or be a part of the program by being a guest and passing the word about what you're up to. A Juneau Afternoon, weekdays live at 3 on KTUO News, repeated at 4 on KRNN, and available on demand via KTUO.org.
The Revelers, they are going to be part of Juneau Jazz and Classics also, and be Saturday, May 2nd at the Jack.
Where the heck are we? H.
10.
10?
10.
Okay, we're on H.
page 10.
Yeah.
Of 214.
Madam Clerk, could you please read Ordinance 2014-24AH?
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $10,935 as partial funding for the Juneau School District Facilities Renovation and Repair Capital Improvement Project, CIPF. 02101, funding provided by 2009 and 2012 general obligation bond interest income.
Thank you, Madam Clerk, Madam Manager.
This ordinance would authorize the appropriation of $10,724.17 in interest income from the DZ covered play area, CIP, and $210.56 in interest income from the Adair County Synthetic Turf Replacement CIP to the Juneau School District's Facility Renovation and Repair CIP. The Public Works and Facilities Committee approved this appropriations at its February 9, 2015 meeting, and the Juneau School Board approved these appropriations at its February 10, 2015 meeting. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. We'll move to public comments at this time on Ordinance 2014-24AH. Do we have anybody from the public who wishes to comment on this ordinance? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Assembly action. Ms. Stroll.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move adoption of Ordinance 2014-24AH and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objection? Hearing none, so ordered. Madam Clerk, item I.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $23,400 as partial funding for the Off Lake LID sewer project U76006. Loan funding provided by the State of Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, APEC, Clean Water, Alaska Clean Water Fund, ACWF.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Madam Manager.
The State of Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation loan funding will provide low-interest financing, 1.5% for 10 years, for the property owner's repayment of the LID assessments. Resolution 2412 authorizes the city manager to apply for and enter into the agreement for this loan. The Public Works and Facilities Committee reviewed and approved this action at its March 23, 2015 meeting and recommended forwarding to the full assembly for approval. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. I will open this up for public comment at this time. Ordinance 2014-24AI. Is there any public comment? Seeing none, public comment is closed. We'll move forward to assembly action. Mr. Van Kerbers, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Raising the
I move adoption of ordinance 2014-24AI and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objections? So order. Madam Clerk, item J.
This is an ordinance appropriating to the city manager the sum of $4 million as partial funding for the Salmon Creek Secondary Disinfection Filtration Project, W75044. Loan funding provided by the State of Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, Alaska Drinking Water Fund.
Thank you, Madam Manager.
Salmon Creek Secondary Disinfection Project involves the assessment of levels of disinfection required, facility permitting, and the design and construction of a secondary disinfection process at the Salmon Creek Water Treatment Facility. This project is necessary to comply with the newly mandated U.S. Environmental Protection Agency surface water treatment rule requirements to provide secondary disinfection of surface water sources, which became effective in 2013. CBJ applied for and received an extension from ADEC to have an approved secondary disinfection system in place no later than October 1st, 2015. This loan increase would enable CBJ to bid the project within the next month and complete the project by the October deadline. Resolutions 2679 and 2705 have authorized the manager to apply for and enter into agreements for these loaned money. The terms of the low-interest loans under the Alaska Revolving Loan Program are 20-year repayment with a 1.5% interest rate. The project loans will be repaid with water utility customer revenues. In the event that the CBJ receives the grant funding from DEC, as listed in the governor's FY16 budget, and depending on contractor bidding prices, some or all of this loan would not be used and the funds would be deappropriated from the project budget. The Public Works and Facilities Committee reviewed and approved this action at its March 23, 2015 meeting and recommended forward to the full assembly for approval. I recommend adoption of this ordinance.
Thank you, Madam Manager. I'll open this up for public comment. Does anybody wish to comment on ordinance 2014-24AJ? Miss, and now to assembly action. Ms. Kalasevsky.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move ordinance 2014-24AJ and ask for unanimous consent.
Is there any objections? So ordered. Madam Clerk, K, item K, ordinance 2014-24AK.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $5,000 as partial funding for the contractual services of a licensed architectural firm for the Ox Bay Area Plan, funding provided by donations.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Madam Manager.
A group of private Ox Bay stakeholders have expressed a desire to contribute to the Ox Bay Area Plan implementation effort through monetary donations. The Community Development Department would make up the difference with the budgeted funds in the amount of $22,000 for a total project cost of $27,000. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager, and I will open this up for public comment. Does anybody in the public wish to comment on this ordinance? Seeing none, wishes of the Assembly. I will close public comment first. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move approval of serial number 2014-24AK. I would like to ask a couple of questions.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
I guess I understand where the $5,000 is coming from. I guess I don't understand where the other $22,000 is coming from. That's first question. And second question is in looking at the March 26th memo that is in our packet, I guess I'm questioning what the usefulness of whatever product we're going to get will be.
Mr. Jones, some of my questions.
And I will ask Mr. Hart, the Community Development Director, to respond to your questions.
Thank you, Mr. Hart. Thank you, Madam Manager. Good evening, Assembly members. the simple question is that we have unspent funds this year, and we've had turnover. We've had other reasons why we haven't spent some of the money this year. So we do have money available to invest in the Ock Bay community. The second question, I think, was what are we going to achieve? And really, first thing that's not on that flyer, it really should be on that flyer, is we have to go through and look at the zoning in that area. We have a whole bunch of different zones that are there, and we're trying to unify those zones. So we have waterfront commercial, we have light commercial, we have regular commercial. The community went through that process. Now the next step is to look at those regs. And then they would also like to look at those regs and how they apply the commercial regulations in that area. It has a big impact on the heights of buildings in that area. So views becomes a really, really important issue. If I want to go to invest in housing there, we want to be sure that the housing that goes on one property doesn't block all the views of the property in front of it. So having a 3D model to explain how we might achieve that, it might mean that for that area we come up with one or two practical ways to preserve views. But we want to do that like we did the rest of the process, and that is through consensus. By showing what that would look like, and this is a tool, simply a tool that I want my staff to be trained on, that modern planning departments are trying to use, and that kids in college are using things like SketchUp today, and software. Yes.
You finished?
Yes, sorry.
Mr. Jones.
Just to follow up then, because maybe your last comment was getting there, but as I read this, it was more drawings and sort of static. And so it's not a software that can be manipulated, that, because I know attending the plans and having read the plan and the public hearings, there is concern as you go up the hillside that if somebody on the water and waterfront commercial built to the 35 or 45 foot level, and just behind them they build a residential single story, they see the back of a 45-foot building. So is this software that you can go up and down, that if you put a specific height restriction, also level above the highway?
Yes, that is true. And the way that with all buildings that are there, that we have, and also, so you can see everything that we have there today with the heights. We also have used, thanks to you, LIDAR imagery, and we can use that as a base map. So I have really good contours for how high every property is in different places. So we use that as a base map as well. So we're using things off the shelf that you've given us. Now we're adding this other component to help the landowners understand how they may be impacting their neighbors' views in this process. And by working as a team over an 8-week period, once you approve it, we'll be intensively working with that, and we'll bring that back to the Planning Commission and to this body.
So I'll step in here just for one question, because it's a follow-up on Lauren, and that is, when does that all come to us, the Planning Commission and us, to change the zoning?
Yep.
If you're convincing people out there, what you're trying to do is show people what is there, what could possibly be there, and then move towards the plan,
yep,
if at all possible. If you're leaving the decision makers out to the very end, aren't you setting the decision makers up for some
conflict? There'll be a number, it's a great question. There's a number of products from this process. So the first product is, what do people want the zone? What are the zones going to be out there? So we have to provide, we'll work on that problem. Are we unifying the zones or making things general commercial that weren't general commercial? We're trying to follow the plan. The plan said, let's look at these options that are out there for the future. So that would be one product, would be the zone, the proposed staff proposed zone changes there. The other product might be, it could be an overlay of that looks at height, just, and we're only focused in the intense area where we want a lot of investment to come, where it's commercial. It doesn't go out into the neighborhoods, although we'll be very aware because we know there's a subdivision with a lot of homes coming in that's going to have a view. So we need to be aware that that subdivision, their views are going to be out there, and they don't want to see maybe not a lot of tall buildings in their view in the future. So there's a lot of things happening simultaneously, and we're trying to take that into account for that.
Ms. Budajewski.
Just a quick question. I don't want to answer. I thought you were buying architectural services for this project, or are you buying software that you can use elsewhere? Are you buying software? You're buying a service.
We're buying the service, and the service will help us accomplish the modeling. But in that process, our staff will be working hand in hand with any architectural firm that's doing it, so that we can see how it's being done and we can learn from them in that process.
Mr. Nankervis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ms. Gladyshift, you just asked one half of the questions I had. I guess I don't really have a question for you, Hal, except to point out something. I've gotten hundreds of emails over the last couple of weeks about funding the school to the cap. And my response to them is, okay, if we can find all the money, when I talk to people, we can find the money to do that, yes. And then following on the heels of that tonight, Mr. Hart walks in and says, I have $22,000 of unspent money. And the questions I get asked out there is, why do we keep spending money? And it strikes a sour chord when on the heels of that, you come in and say, look at it, we had $22,000 that we didn't spend, now I'll spend it. I understand what you're talking about doing. Not trying to shoot the messenger here,
absolutely,
but you've given me the opportunity to bring that out because
you
were here tonight and you saw everything that we had going on. But so you know that's the battle I fight, and I think everybody up here on the assembly fights is like, well, if you're spending money just because you had it, well, how do I argue that? Tell me the argument here.
Thank you. I think the first argument that you would propose is that between three or four developments alone, this community could be putting $80 million more in the tax rolls. Let's do that. Let's do that so that you can tax that for a stream of tax for many years to come. And it will probably be appreciating as well because it is a really wonderful place. So there's that. The second is we're in this for 20 years. We're in this for a long term. Third is by helping this development happen, you'll create jobs there. If you were to do a mixed-use development there, that creates jobs. Mixed use means there's retail on one floor. It could be a restaurant. So you have jobs in an area where we need jobs. You have new investment for everybody's tax rolls to fund those schools coming in. This will encourage that to happen faster.
Thank you. Mr. Keith.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I'd just like to help Mr. Hart out with his fourth argument. Which is that we've been talking to the Finance Committee about a significant amount of unspent money that has been dropped to fund balance and not been proposed to be spent. that this is one of those occasions where it is arguably justifiable, but almost every time it's happened, it's just gone into the kitty for us as an assembly to spend on highest priorities. This one would be the rare exception as opposed to the norm.
And I deeply appreciate that. Thank you.
Mr. Vancouver?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Let's follow up on the last one. So the last response you had to my question, do you believe that doing this will result in more investment in Ock Bay? And if the answer to that is yes, I would maintain that that should have been your first argument to us,
yeah,
or your point to us as to why we should spend that money.
Absolutely. I agree with that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Mr. Hart?
Yes.
Did I have another question?
I think so.
Ms. White, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I guess, Mr. Hart, I'm still trying to understand what exactly this $27,000 total will buy that somebody couldn't actually just figure out, you know, how tall a building is going to be and how it's going to... It sounds like a great toy to me. I would be more excited to see that $27,000 spent on something that would make the permit process a little smoother for the average Joe Blow, or I guess I'm just still trying to figure out, why can't this be done another way? It's more stuff that's sitting in the back and for people to play with instead of being out front helping people at the counter.
Great comment. I think one thing that will make it easier to understand out there, that there'll be fewer zones than we have. If we get to do what we'd like to do, would be eliminate at least one of the zones so that instead of three different kinds of commercial zones, you would have at least, you'd be down to two. We would like to also work with the architects to keep it simple so that what is being said is actually going to be what would be built there. So that is part of that process when we get to wordsmithing what our recommendation is for the zoning. So they're also assisting us in that component of it too. So there are some really day-to-day kinds of things that when someone comes in, oh, here's the other piece. A lot of people are vision focused, and when they learn, they can learn something a lot faster when they see it in it. And you could do it with stills, but it's really interesting how fast people pick up with it. But I'm talking about investors as well as homeowners. I've seen this work in other places, and so I just, that's why I'm a proponent of it, I guess.
So one last one from me then, which is kind of a follow-up to what we just did. Can't we do this and get to that $80 million worth of, or whatever you said, that worth of investment without doing this?
I would suggest that we could, but this helps me communicate those points to people that haven't thought of this area as an investment yet. So imagine if you were new to the area and you were looking at a neighborhood for investment, this would be a pretty neat neighborhood to invest in, because you're going to, in this process, you can tell a lot of stories through a vision that you can't do sitting at the mic. An example of that vignette would be if you're going through this Ock Bay area, you can show instantly that they're going to, at each entry point to Ock Bay, will have a gateway. You're going to be able to show that it's a biking and walkable community because DOT's improvements. Right away, there's a couple of things that you can show that are going to be there in place very soon, but aren't there today. That has a really big impact on investors to look at the neighborhood. Other things that you're going to be able to show, if we were to pan over to a property or another, you could show a mixed use under our standards. Here's what we would require. And you would be able to show that so that right away the investor goes, oh, I get it, I can do that. So that we would show that we prefer parking in the back or to the side. We would be able to show those kinds of things and not necessarily, it's hard to tell all those things in a story. The other story we can tell is an economic development story, and that story would be, all right, I want to spend a day at Ock Bay. Imagine how much money people will spend in Ock Bay's area if they can walk out on the seawalk that doesn't exist right now by the port that we're investing in. Imagine if they go to the Waffle Company and a couple of places for dinner and can buy some clothes and a few other things in a neighborhood setting. People love to do that now. So you're showing that as a goal and objective where we would be in 20 years.
Any other questions? Ms. Pearl.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Mr. Hart, or to the Madam Manager, either one, is it common for a group of stakeholders to come together to make these kinds of contributions to implement an area plan? Or is this kind of an unusual step?
We haven't done an area plan in a very
long time.
So I think it shows that the group is very committed to keep this moving forward and to try and get to the next step. So I think any time our private citizens come in and say we support this and actually put dollars behind it is a show of support for it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what struck me right away when I read this, and I'm assuming some of the stakeholders are business people in the Ock Bay community as well.
Yes, yeah, and they're sitting here with us this evening. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
And they see the investment value of doing this?
I believe so, yes.
All right. Anything else? Any other comments, questions? Did we have a motion to move this thing? Who did that?
Mr. Jones
moved.
I moved it and had a question. I didn't have an objection, and then everybody else. So I will move it again that we approve ordinance 2014-24AK and would ask unanimous consent.
Is there any objections? Seeing none, so ordered. Okay, Madam Clerk, item L, which is ordinance 2014-24AL.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $17,186 as partial funding for phase one of the Historic Preservation Plan update, grant funding provided by the State of Alaska Department of Natural Resources.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Madam Manager.
Phase one of the update of the Historic Preservation Plan would include hiring a consultant for public education regarding historic preservation and outreach, scoping meetings and public meetings, and to solicitate input regarding historic preservation. The consultant would also evaluate the existing plan and provide a report with findings. The work performed under this project would be a combined effort of a historic preservation consultant, the CBJ Historic Resources Advisory Committee, Juneau Douglas City Museum, Community Development Department, and the project manager. Total project cost estimate is $28,644. In accordance with using certified local government funds, the CBJ is required to provide a 40% match, which would be fulfilled through staff wages from a variety of CBJ departments' operating budget. Total project cost includes an 8.5% state administrative surcharge. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Is there anybody in the public who wishes to comment on this ordinance? Seeing none, I'll close public comment. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I would move serial number 2014-24AL and just had a couple of comments or questions.
Go ahead, Mr. Jones.
Thank you. When I participated in the public meeting on Front and Franklin, the engineering department was there. Dowell HKM, the contractor, mentioned that looking at the historic district boundaries and standards, was something they were going to be doing. Now I see this, but I don't see in the narrative provided by the manager any connection between Front and Franklin and what this group is doing. And it was pretty clear that there were a lot of concerned citizens that were concerned about the standards in the district, and especially as it related to the sign ordinance, which was before the Planning Commission last week, and sort of the penalties. So that's one question about, is there any dual overlap? Is, in fact, the engineering project that's being managed by one person that's going to be at the chamber on Thursday connected to this at all? And then also, would hopefully that beyond the sort of organized groups you talk about here, the Downtown Improvement Group and the Downtown Business Association ought to be part of this narrative of who's involved in that in this kind of discussion if we're going to move forward. So there's some questions buried in that narrative, and maybe Mr. Hart could talk about that a little bit.
Mr. Mayor?
Go ahead.
Making it brief, I agree on the connections, absolutely, and I've been working with the DIG a little bit to each week to bring them up to speed on a number of things going on in the downtown. So this would be yet another one. The time frame for this is a little later in the year, so timing is sometimes off. But you're absolutely right. We need to get, for all the different projects in the downtown, we need to get the same community that you saw the other night at that, you know, we had a great turnout. We need that same community turnout for historic district issues as well as the rest of the downtown, the larger area of the downtown as well. So there's some linkages that we need to work on, and I'll continue to make those connections, I hope, in that process.
Just a brief follow-up. I didn't hear what I was looking for in terms of an answer of what is the scope of work of Dowell HKM related to the issues raised here, because that was very clear at that public meeting that they were going to be working on it. And I know Rory's sitting back here.
Yeah.
Mr. Stephen, go ahead.
The scope of this work for this grant money is far broader than Front and Franklin, than the historic district, than downtown. So this is borough-wide. And so this phase one involves hiring a consultant that is going to be doing community outreach and learn from the community what they want in preserving historical structures in areas of Juneau. And the output of this phase one will be a summary narrative of what was learned. And then if there is a phase two, that would be writing the plan itself.
Just a quick, when was the last time this plan was done?
1997 work was completed on this plan almost 20 years ago. It's still in draft status. I can't answer that the obvious question of why is it in draft status.
It was never about this.
Okay, any other questions? Ms. Craig.
Well, now I'm confused. I have read the historic, you know, I have read their information, but it's been a long time. And I thought what they were confined to was the historic district downtown. Is this a potential for increasing that area of oversight?
That could be an outcome. It really depends on what we learn in talking with the community. So the historic district could grow, could shrink, it could disappear. There could be a new historic district in Auk Bay.
Okay, that's concerning, but okay.
Any other comments, questions? Okay, Mr. Jones, you moved it.
I did.
And you got your answers, your questions answered? Is there any other?
They were answered, yes.
Yes.
And I don't object, but I'm going to watch this carefully.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Jones. I appreciate that. So, Ordinance 2014-24 AL
as is before us. Is there any objections to the adoption? Seeing none, so ordered. Madam Manager, M, Ordinance 2014-24AN.
An ordinance appropriating to the manager the sum of $1,018,329 as funding for the Juneau International Airport Runway Rehabilitation Capital Improvement Project, CIP A50079, funding provided by the Federal Aviation Administration and the State of Alaska Department of Transportation.
Madam Manager.
FAA funds 93.75% of the project, with the remaining being split between the Alaska Department of Transportation and the Juneau International Airport. The airport matching funds transfer request T-969 were approved by the Assembly at its April 7, 2015 meeting. The airport board approved this action at its March 11, 2015 meeting and recommended forwarding to the full Assembly for approval. I recommend this ordinance be adopted.
Thank you, Madam Manager. Is there anybody from the public who wishes to comment on this ordinance? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Ms. Becker, you have your hand up.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move Ordinance 2014-24AN and ask unanimous consent.
Just a question.
Mr. Keel, question.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. So, I may be misreading the economic impact note. Does this, is this it? Does this get us to fully funded?
Oh, excuse me.
Patty Delabriere with the airport. No, it does not. This adds to about the $20 million that we have already appropriated. There will be some cleanup and some additional things as we move along. So I'm anticipating some additional funds from the FAA as we close out some of the grants.
Does this get us to completion of major construction?
Yes.
Oh. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Of the runway project. Sorry, I'm sorry to throw that in. We have before us Ordinance 2014-24AN. Is there any other questions or comments? Is there any objections to it? Passing? Seeing none, so ordered. Madam Manager. Hey, you, the clerk.
Okay. Resolution.
Resolution 2713B.
A resolution adopting the City and Borough Capital Improvement Program for fiscal years 2016 through 2021 and establishing the capital improvement project priorities for the fiscal year 2016.
Thank you, Madam Clerk. Madam Manager.
The Public Works and Facilities Committee reviewed the CIP at its meeting on February 9, 2015, and forwarded the plan to the Assembly. I recommend holding the charter required public hearing for this ordinance and referring it back to the Assembly Finance Committee for further review.
Thank you, Madam Manager. And I'll open this up for public comment. Is there anybody who wishes to speak to Resolution 2713B? Seeing none, public comment is closed. Assembly action, Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move that we refer Resolution 2713B to the Finance Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. Is there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Mr. Jones.
I just want to take a moment to comment on Murphy's Law, that the length of the discussion is inverse proportion to the seriousness of the issue. The two $20,000 ones we spent a lot of time on.
Yeah.
The $22 million we just did, we did a lot less time on. I just wanted to point that out, Mr. Mayor.
Mm-hmm. You're right. You're right on, Mr. Jones.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll move forward to unfinished business. We have a couple of liquor license ownership transfers. Madam Manager?
And I would look to the chair of the Human Resources Committee because they dealt with it before meeting tonight.
Mr. Mayor, this evening the Human Resources Committee did meet prior to the assembly meeting, we did review both liquor licenses, the transfer of Gold Belt. That was referred back to us from the last committee. There were some issues about leasing out. We reviewed all the material. A representative from Gold Belt and their attorney was on the line and person was here. The committee voted to waive our right to protest on the Gold Belt area tramway to Gold Belt Incorporated, that transfer. So I would make that motion that we waive our right to protest.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Is there any objections to that? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Mayor, then secondly, we looked at the last meeting. We protested the liquor license 4192 Siong Sushi Bar, and that was due to unpaid sales taxes. In fact, the ABC board did suspend their license. We were notified of that. Since then, the CBJ was paid in full on their sales tax, and the ABC board is meeting on Wednesday, and so the HRC committee moved to the assembly a recommendation that we withdraw our protest of this liquor license because it was made on the sales tax, and that sales tax is now paid. So I would make that motion before the assembly and ask unanimous consent.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Are there any objections to that request? Seeing none, so ordered. Madam Manager, any new business?
No, thank you, sir.
Staff reports. Ms. Mead, did you have anything for us? Quickly?
No, not tonight.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Mead. Assembly reports, mayor's report, I'll put off for next meeting. Committee reports. Ms. Becker.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just we did have a committee as a whole on the 13th of April, and we sent a letter to the legislature supporting the marijuana regulations, and then also requesting that we be granted local regulatory authority. We heard about mitigation for avalanche, glacier outburst floods, and then we also talked about the aquatic facility. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Mr. Keel?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Lands Committee has not met since our last meeting. The next meeting of the Marijuana Policy Committee is May the 7th, if memory serves correctly. And just to follow up on what Ms. Becker said, while the legislature did pass a bill creating a marijuana control board, it did not pass any other marijuana-related legislation, which probably will leave us adopting more local ordinances than we otherwise would have to clean up and interpret some of the things in the initiative that sure could have used a state cleanup.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. Ms. Green.
There is a Finance Committee meeting this Wednesday evening. Your packet was passed out, so you do have the packet. And a reminder that that meeting will commence at 4:30 and be over by 6:30.
Excuse me, it will commence at 4:30?
Yes.
Thank you, Ms. Crane. Any questions? Don't throw your packet in the garbage behind you. Mr. Nan Curvis.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Public Works and Facility Committee met April 13th. We discussed at length and had public testimony on the Jackson Street project. That's the one, the street up in Blueberry Hills. We talked at length about the Dunn Street project, which you heard about tonight. We talked about the Eagle Street paving LID that is moving forward, the McGinnis Subdivision LID, McGinnis Subdivision off Back Loop near Montana Creek. The ballots came back on their LID, and it was 70% approval for going forward with that paving project. We discussed the retaining wall mitigation at Stater Harbor with DOT. That was on there tonight, I believe. The old Douglas Harbor bid has been awarded for work. I believe it has been awarded. Mr. Watt just left. I think that has been awarded, and it came in under engineer's estimate. The next meeting for Public Works and Facilities Committee is noon, Monday, May 4th, here in Chambers. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Nankervis. Mr. Jones.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As stated, the Human Resources Committee did meet prior to the assembly. The two liquor licenses were the issue. We had a brief discussion on the Social Services Advisory Board, and we're waiting until after the Juneau Community Foundation has a retreat to move forward on that further discussion. The other business we talked about, there are four vacancies on the Juneau Commission on Aging, and at our meeting on the Juneau Economic Development Plan, there was a lot of issues related to that committee being very important to have the community dialogue. So we wanted to point out that we do have those four vacancies. If people know people that want to apply, I believe that's on our HRC agenda for June 7th. In addition, we do have Committee of the Whole, HRC meeting as a Committee of the Whole on the 10th and the 15th of June. We have a vacancy on the Planning Commission that we'll move into that. And after tonight, having done the pool board, those we will try to fill that on the 15th. That'll be the second board. So hopefully that recruitment will start out and we'll be able to do that. So we'll have basically four full boards and then the Planning Commission vacancy between those two meetings to do.
All right. Thank you. Mr. Jones? Mr. Jones, you just want to continue with liaison reports?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Downtown Business Association met last month. It meets again this Thursday. They talked about the economic plan, and the chair and several of the members was at our meeting on April 20th. They're also trying to recruit some new board members. JEDC is going to meet May 6th as their next meeting on April 8th. They also talked about the economic plan, and they were here on the 20th, and they'll be back here on Wednesday night. We had a presentation on the STEM program. And then the other thing I just want to remind people of is the Maritime Festival is May 9th on the docks. That day is also for the Gold Belt Tram, their funeral appreciation day. And all of the sales of the tram rides that are discounted, all of those proceeds will be going as their donation to the Raptor Center as part of that Juneau Appreciation Day, also on May 9th. The Planning Commission, they meet tomorrow night. They did meet last week. It's a lengthy meeting. I think they extended two or three times. We left here about, I don't know, 11:45, something like that. And there were two items that didn't get done, but they did a lot of rezone requests, waterfront commercial, the commercial, the vice versa. And basically, at that, because of some issues that they wanted to discuss on zoning issues, they, in essence, denied all of those zoning changes. So they agreed with staff on a couple that the staff recommended denying, and several that the staff wanted to approve, they denied and left alone. So I don't know what that result will be in terms of the new process, whether whether those will be coming forward to us in some other manner, I don't know. But that's basically my liaison report. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Jones. Ms. Jeffy, you have a question?
No, I got it. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Nankervis?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Very quickly, Docks and Harbors, we heard from them at Finance last week. Next meeting's this Thursday, 5:30 in Chambers. Eagle Crest, we heard from them also at Finance. Next meeting will be Thursday, May 7th at 5:30 in room 224. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you. Ms. Troll?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. On Tuesday, April 7th, the Affordable Housing Commission met. And most of the item there was discussing the Housing Action Plan, which is due to be completed in June. And the strategy really is to get a good sense of our housing mix and rental units and what we need to do to catch up, and then once we catch up, to stay there. I should let the other assembly members know the commission was not happy about the action on the apartment grant incentive program. They were disappointed and frustrated by the assembly actions, but they're moving on. They anticipate that they'll be back with the somewhat of dealing with that accessory apartment program after the housing action plan. So we'll see it again. They continue to work on the mobile home down payment assistant loan program, and because it's a loan program and not a grant program, I assured them that that might be a little smoother sailing. Had a brief update on the Peterson Hill, and they definitely want to dig deeper into Peterson Hill and understand the process and the funding needed to continue to move on that. The Juneau Commission on Sustainability met April 22nd, and I was unable to attend due to the Finance Committee, but do receive report that most of their focus right now is working with the consultants in moving ahead on the energy plan. I will be here Wednesday, but then after that I'm being in Ketchikan for a week of meetings with the Tongass Advisory Committee. This is our final meeting where we make our recommendations, and so it'll be important, but I'm fairly optimistic that the group is going to come together, and we are also going to be meeting with a lot of the key Forest Service personnel, because whatever recommendations we have, how we implement them is going to be different than what the Forest Service has done before. So not only does the timber industry need to transition, the Forest Service also needs to transition into a new way of doing things, to get sales out quicker, to use different appraisal process, these sorts of things. So we're having an all-day meeting with the Forest Service on Friday, May 1st. And I will be down there for that and online for the rest of the meetings that week.
Thank
that's
you.
It for that.
That's a wrap.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Parks and Rec Advisory Committee had a retreat. They have a lot of new members a couple of Saturdays ago, and Kirk provided a summary of all the facilities and services provided by Parks and Rec, and they did a strengths, weaknesses, opportunities exercise to try to understand what Parks and Rec, what they can help, how they can help Parks and Rec. They started but didn't finish figuring out their priorities, so they're still working on that. But it's a new group that's invigorated by the work. Their next meeting is Tuesday, May 5th at 6 o'clock. And the Local Emergency Planning Commission committee hasn't met since we met, but their next meeting is Wednesday, May 13th at noon.
Thank you. Ms. Spring.
The hospital board meets tomorrow night. We've heard their budget. I understand that we may be coming back with an amendment to that budget, which will be presented later, and I'll know more after later. So that's it.
An amendment to increase it or give them more or what?
More revenue. It should include more revenue and more expenditures. So it will be revealed Wednesday at the meeting.
All right.
Got to come to the meeting.
Anything else, Ms. Crane?
That's it.
Mr. Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. In the interest of brevity, one issue with the school board. We all received the letter from the school board asking the city to pursue a special election for school bonds to renovate Marie Drake. And just today, the Department of Education and Early Development sent out an email that I believe, and I've talked with our attorney briefly, really foreclosed any possibility of hitting that 90-day window effectively and qualifying for this last round of school bond debt reimbursement from the state of Alaska. Which is a little personally disappointing, but I believe that's where we are. And so the board obviously did not meet today and so has not done anything with its request since that came out. But because there is really no 90-day window available to us, I had at least a conversation, preliminary conversation with one board member. We'll all recall that we, at the board's request, allowed them to move some unused money from past capital projects into the Marie Drake CIP. The Board of Education can continue to refine its plans and cost estimates for that and bring the Assembly a more developed plan when they have it. The conversation at that time will need to be whether the work can wait 5 years until the state of Alaska, at least at present, the plan is, reopens a window for bond debt reimbursement, or whether we will need to talk about doing that entirely with CBJ bonds, city bonds, without debt reimbursement help from the state. I don't know enough right now about the state of the building to know whether it can wait 5 years for the work or not. But there's no rush right now because there is no opportunity to get that bond debt reimbursement right now.
So for staff, is Ms. Mead going to look into that and make sure that that's, I'm not saying you're not accurate or nothing, Jesse, but to make it official, who's going to look in it from staff and make sure that that's all accurate?
Actually, I spent about 6 hours today looking at that issue and came to a final conclusion, which is about the time that I got the email saying the state is not going to consider. The only way that we would have been able to sneak in under that window was if the state was going to decide requests. And they cut us off by the department saying they were not going to consider requests. So I agree with Mr. Keel that that avenue is cut off.
Okay, so we're going to stop work on that issue. And I hope that you will pass back to the school district that we want some better numbers for what is needed at that school and what we're going to do with that school. For one thing, I don't know why we're still got a bonding request for $20 million when we've accomplished three or four of the big packages of that school with the $18 million from Juno Douglas High School reno the first time. So in the meantime here, we've replaced all the windows, a new roof, and a complete new boiler room in that building. So and my question is, why are we still at $20 million? And so hopefully they can refine that RFP or that request and give us some specifics before we actually move forward with any type of bonding or whatever.
For the sake of clarity, when you say that we'll stop work on that, we'll stop work on the notion of a special election
right.
within 90 days. We will not stop work on refining and designing and figuring out exactly what this building needs.
Okay. Right. So if you just pass that on to them so that you know that we're looking at it. Let's see, Ms. White.
Well, story of my life, the email that should have come in 6 hours earlier to save you a lot of work. I feel there. Well, that was the closest I had gotten to the airport board for a while, and JCBB is everybody's gearing up for a very busy tourist season. So that's all I got there.
All right. Thank you. Ms. Becker?
Thank you, Ms. Mayor. The Alaska Committee met and rehashed some things like daylight savings time and the downtown parking situation and the circular bus JEDC wants us to do. And the visitor satisfaction survey is winding down and statewide polling. The chamber, this last chamber, was John Binkley from the cruise industry came, and I think I can safely say, and Mr. Jones would agree with me, there were a number of concerns about Juno expressed.
Inappropriately, but yes.
Yes. Oh, thank you. I wasn't going to be that critical, but yes, absolutely inappropriately. In the last two meetings of DIG, one of them, the first one was discussing the sign ordinance. The historical committee came and discussed how they would like us to do something about the sign ordinance and to enforce it and raise the fine. And then last Friday they did a cleanup downtown. Southeast Conference had been kind of busy a little bit with some reports and some teleconferences. Talked about farm to fish conference. Had updates on transportation and timber. that's affecting Southeast Alaska. Sent a resolution to the legislature, don't cut public radio in such a severe manner. And another one to the legislature supporting the Medicaid bill of the governor. And we had a teleconference that I thought was very interesting. It was on fisheries in Southeast. And we discussed strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And there were, it was a really good discussion, I thought. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Ms. Becker. Presiding officers' reports, do we have anything out there?
Mr. Mayor, nothing to update you on. We were supposed to, we were thinking we might see something today on that, but the city attorney was otherwise tasked, so we probably won't see anything until next meeting. Maybe before that, maybe by next week.
Ms. Casey, you can't leave yet. We're not done.
Oh.
I'm joking.
No, he's not.
Thank you very much.
He won't let me leave.
Welcome aboard. I think I see her. I'm sorry.
That was it. Okay. That was the update. All done. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll be getting that by next week sometime.
I believe so, yes.
Thank you very much.
The draft.
Anybody, there's nothing else. Is there hanging fire right now?
There's an executive session right there.
Okay. The assembly comments and questions, and I guess I'll just start real quick. I'm trying to find the time to do Ms. Keeper's evaluation, and I don't want to do it after a meeting like tonight. It's not fair to do an evaluation on somebody after we're all tired and tuckered out and ready to get the heck out of here. So I'm looking at a Tuesday or a Thursday.
A special meeting?
A special meeting, that's all we do. I know. It just, everything has been building up to the point where we're just not getting to Ms. Kiefer's evaluation, and we need to do that. And I've got all the stuff from the 360, and I've begun writing it up a little bit, but I do need all of your input and talk to Ms. Kiefer and what you think about her work. So I'm looking at a Tuesday or a Thursday night for an hour and a half.
Okay, is it evening? So next Thursday we have the marijuana committee, but this Thursday we don't have anything on the CBJ calendar, do we? That planning commissioner?
How about a lunch meeting? Can we have lunch? I like that.
I'll be involved in the Tonics Advisory Committee. It goes through the evening on Thursday.
Mr. Nankervis, you're
going? Mr. Mayor, I don't know about anybody else, but on the 5th, there's no planning commission meeting Tuesday night on the 5th in here. And I don't know if you're wanting this room or 224, but.
I've got something on the 5th. So Parks and Rec.
I don't know.
Meeting that night,
oh, but. So they're in here. Okay.
I could do the 5th. If we did it somewhere in a different room.
Go to the 5th. That's Mary and I have another engagement that evening.
Oh, we do. What do we have?
How about the 12th or the 14th?
Oh, that's the 5th.
Yes. I'll be at the AML board.
AML board.
All right.
That's on the 12th.
How about the 19th or the 21st? We're auctioning these babies off.
I could have done the 14th. What about you guys? That also AML?
Yep.
Okay.
Okay.
That's the last week I did. You said the 19th?
19th or the 21st?
19th.
I'd rather do the 19th.
Oh, the 19th is a concert.
Concert. Let's see if we have to bother just Mary. We'll bother her and see if we can't do on the 19th.
Or a Saturday morning.
Pardon?
For a Saturday morning?
What's that?
No?
Okay.
Oh!
See any meetings? Open houses, real estate, yeah.
Okay. So the 19th is open here.
Okay.
So we'll shoot for the 19th. Will you make sure that we tell Di that? Or I'll forget.
And what time?
5 o'clock?
Time are we putting
as soon as we can in the evening, whatever time is available for all of you.
Okay.
Five.
I can do
5. 5? If you scale 5, then I could go to
the concert.
There you go. You'll be in a big hurry. I like it.
Okay, 5 o'clock on the 19th.
What concert?
We're at? Here, here.
No, he was asking about Cleveland.
Okay. That's enough. Ms. Becker, or somebody comments a question.
I just mentioned that it was a very successful empty bowls Sunday night. Lots of bowls, lots of people. And I think that they were very pleased and made lots of money. The Glory Bowl. For the Glory Bowl.
I'm sorry.
It was a great event. It was a great event.
I donated, but I didn't do it.
Ms. White?
That's it. Okay, let me see. I got two little things. One of them, Kate Troll and I met with a few people in the public, and we were looking at the table for municipal uses, so we're going to beat up the Lands Committee guy with some ideas. And at the March 16th meeting, I had asked about...
Daycare.
I'm sorry. At the March 16th meeting, I had asked about getting an update on where we were on electronic payments. Do we have any kind of an update since then?
No, we have no update. We've made no progress on that.
Okay. That's an answer. And I'm sorry, yeah, the other thing was on the daycare problem.
Ms. Crane?
Just that I'd like to see some progress on that. Ms. White has brought it up. I brought it up several times. Mr. Nankervis brought it up as a budget issue. So I know everybody is swamped, but at some point I really would like some information back on this is a priority for me, and I'd like to see what we can do and when we can do it.
Mr. Nankervis. Mr. Keel, sorry, I didn't mean to.
All right, I won't take it personally.
Thank you,
Mr. Mayor. had the opportunity this past Friday to spend part of the evening with the Pioneers of Alaska. Invited me to talk about our proposed changes to sales tax exemptions, and especially senior sales tax exemptions. And it's a remarkable group. I expected to leave several pounds lighter, and they were entirely civil at all times. We had a good conversation, so I appreciate the opportunity to talk with them. And then, as you heard me say earlier, our friends a few blocks up the hill will be here a little longer. They adjourn tonight and will convene in special session tomorrow morning. And so I know that members of the Alaska Committee have been just trying to add legislators to whatever it is they're doing, whether it's just dinner at home or going to that concert or whatever it is, invite one along. They're here longer than they plan to be, away from their families longer than they plan to be. If any of you have the opportunity, just reach out and invite somebody along, and we can help them feel comfortable in the capital city.
Thank you, Mr. Keel. Ms. Crane?
Nothing else this evening. Thank you.
Ms. Budachevsky?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Ms. Troll?
I'll pass. Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Nankervis?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. One thing, just to follow up on our earlier discussion about the Dunn Street stuff, back to what was on the public hearing, or public notice, excuse me, that 2014-24 AP, the other half of that, which was the sewer water half, I'm not sure what we need to do procedurally, but I don't think we need to see that again until and if the rest of the other half of it gets worked out. And I don't know what procedurally that means. We just don't bring it up next time and wait. I'm not sure what hoops we have to jump through. I just think it doesn't make sense to see that again unless we see both halves.
It's from staff, then. I think this was trying to get ahead or getting caught up with that other one for sure. But if we don't use that money and it's appropriated for that, then we can just, deappropriate. So I don't know what staff's recommendation is, whether they would recommend us just to move forward with that one, vote it up or down, whatever way we do, and then move forward. Hopefully it's up, and that way that piece of it is ready to go if it's needed.
And Mr. Watt referenced that the water line was not in good shape. He didn't say how bad it was, and so I'm sure he can speak to that at the next meeting.
Okay.
That was all I had. I just think we ought to tie those two together. Either we see them both or we see neither one. So, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Thank you, Mr. Nankervis. Mr. Jones?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Just a couple of things. I've been trying to track the subdivision ordinance by attending the subcommittee meetings. I'm learning quite a bit. I'm trying to be very quiet and not add to their problems, but I think there will be more delays a little bit longer. I think it's not as well done as they thought it was anyway. And just a couple other comments. I know that we probably added to the Parks and Rec director's headaches tonight a little bit, but I was surprised to read in the paper. I didn't realize that we owned the building out around Eagle Beach that Saga had been operating and stuff. So Parks and Rec director and I have talked about maybe taking a late Friday afternoon and going out and looking at the property because I didn't know we owned it. I've been sort of doing some of that lately. I did take the opportunity to take a ride with the JPD. Given the issues on biosolids where they talked about the difference between the two plants, I went out and toured the Juno treatment plant, which in all the years of driving out the main road, I just blithely go by. It was an interesting walk around. And I sort of appreciated the resolution that, or the, what is it? Public Service Recognition Week, because there's a lot of folk out there in those two or three tours that I took that are, you know, doing a lot of work behind the scenes that I don't think about. So, but I really did enjoy the treatment plant because some of it was down and they had it all cleaned out. And it was interesting to see stuff. Otherwise, you would never see because you don't want to go into buildings where all the stuff is.
Right.
But been trying to do that lately, just try to get out and about. I don't drive around as much as you do, but I do like to sort of get involved a little bit. So thank you, Mr. Mayor.
All right. Good. Thank you, Mr. Jones.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes.
Just to follow up, since we plan to bring the subdivision ordinance to you on the 4th, mm-hmm. For discussion about what it is and what it does, in preparation of that, there were two memos that I sent. One was on remote subdivisions. One explained some other issues that we were asking the SRC to address. There's a third one coming that has comments from Mr. Watt and some issues with some of the policy direction that was given that he thinks needs to be addressed. If you did not receive those, just let me know. I'll send them to you again so that you have them in preparation of Monday. We can put them in. Sure.
That would be good.
Did everybody get those? Or you need them again?
Okay. It would be good if they were in.
We'll put it in the packet.
Together.
For the COW meeting.
Okay, anything else?
The continuation.
Pardon?
Public participation.
Right. What? The next thing is continuation of public participation on. Oh no, you're not. Do you want to hear from Ms. Sika?
Oh, I'm taking my hat off really quick so I don't have to move. Lauren brought up the two events on May 9th, but there's also the litter-free cleanup, and I should have mentioned it earlier when everybody was here. And so litter-free invites everybody to come out May 9th, 8 to 10. The bag sites are open. Pick up a bag and pick up trash, and then go to Maritime Festival, and then take a tram ride.
And since we're saying good things about that May 9th, my oldest granddaughter is getting married on May 9th, too. So if you want to come out for that.
Blood of the Fleet is this Saturday.
Is this Saturday?
The second. Mm-hmm, the second.
Oh, I hadn't heard about it.
Yeah, and afterwards.
What time?
At 10 o'clock.
And then there'll be the breakfast at.
Mrs.
Fish.
All those notes are in my computer.
Okay, anything else?
Thank you.
I'm going to whack this thing. Let's go home.